Hey, kids. You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles, and pancakes. The SML Podcast.
You were there. You were just not looking at chat.
My Skype didn't pop up. Usually it pops up, and then I looked at the clock and I was like, wait a second. Where the fuck are my messages?
Gone. Stolen.
Yeah. I was like, I'm sitting here waiting for my messages.
You are a black hole of messages sometimes. I don't know. It
really is true.
Like, I'll message you on Facebook and they'll not get through. I'll message you on Skype and they'll not get through. I think you're just avoiding me.
No. Sometimes I go lay on the couch and then I can't see my computer from there. So sometimes you are just shit out of luck if I'm asleep. But sometimes I'll message you guys or you in general, Joe, and like it'll have the little icon, but it won't turn gray. And then other times it'll be white that it didn't send, but then you'll answer me anyway. I'm like, I don't fucking know what's going on anymore. Huh. Either a message goes through and I get an answer, or it doesn't and I don't.
Such language. Oh, my.
Fuck.
Fucking A.
That's what makes this special.
So, yeah, I'm just keeping all of this. Cole, you're here. Purnell's here. Chris is here. Tim's here. How's everyone doing?
I'm doing okay. It was just very sleepy. All the sleepy. But when I'm not sleepy, I'm accomplishing shit.
Hello. I want to accomplish shit. Never mind. No, I don't. I got too much shit to do.
Yes, you do. You're an artist.
Man, I do so much shit.
You do a lot of shit. Do shit.
Oh, nice.
Tim, how are you doing?
I'm all right.
Just all right?
Pretty good. Yeah. Solid.
Not saucy? Not spicy? Not frisky
bingo? Nope.
I know you said you had the week off. Any fun plans?
No. My child is still, my child is in school, so that is kind of a fun plan that he's not around every day. that creates a fun plan just kind of like on its own momentum. You know, mostly I'm just like, I'm doing housework shit. But the, you know, if I get it done by Thursday, then I get a couple days where I could just sit around and play video games without, interference, which is pretty great.
That in itself has to be pretty friggin' nice. You're like, all the ducks are in such a row that it's like, you know what? I won't play fucking games. I can't just yet, but when the time is there, there's no conflict, no concern. I'm playing a fucking game, and nobody's going to tell me different.
Yeah, that's the hope and the plan.
I look forward to my kids going back to in-person school so I can do that shit again.
Your kids are all like teenagers, right?
Yeah, well, not number three. She's only 8.
So she would prevent you probably from playing. I'm like, well, what would a teenager do to prevent you from playing games? Like, go get another room. Don't use your TV. You're using my damn TV. Go buy one. Get a job.
Goddamn hippies. Get off my lawn.
Once they hit a certain age, you're like, you know what? Get your own damn TV. What about, I don't have a job yet. You better go fucking buy one.
Oh, they have TVs in their rooms. They have their own TVs and consoles and stuff. It's just that, you know, it's not good parenting practice to never interact with your children. So sometimes,
come on,
details.
Sometimes I've got to be in the funeral.
I think
they get old enough; they got to learn to fend for themselves, right?
This is the gamer generation. Shit,
it is a little scary because number one goes to college next year.
That is scary.
This is her senior year, and then she's gone. And then I'm
how does that feel?
It's terrifying.
You did it. You made it.
I did. I like. I
one down, two to go. Holy shit!
Congratulations, me. But at the same time, it's like, did I teach her everything she needs to know? And sometimes, listen, sometimes teenage girls do shit, and you just look at them and you go, "You're not going to make it on your own."
Well, that's just it, though. I mean, even as someone who's not a parent, but it's probably easier for me to say specifically because I'm not a parent, you never teach them everything. It's literally impossible to do that. Like, they have to fail sometime, somehow, to get the rest of it. The hope is that they don't fail in specific ways.
Yeah. And hopefully they don't fail into prison.
Yeah, hopefully their failures are funny, not bad.
She'll be like, I need to know how to do my taxes. And I'm like, girl, you need to manage a macaroni and cheese first. After that, we'll talk about that.
Or she'll file her taxes poorly, owe a lot of money to the government one year, and go, I won't fuck that up again. That's what happened to me. Honestly, a lot of that crap was like that for me. It's like, well, credit card. Like, who taught me credit cards? Nobody, because my mom, her idea of a credit card was just spend it. That's what the money's for, right?
You know, have a very different take on this kind of stuff, and it makes it a little harder to teach her how to do things, because my parents were gone by the time I was 17, mm-hmm. and so I was just on my own. Like, I turned 18, I got together with David six or 8 months later or whatever, we were in our own house and doing our own thing, and I was paying bills and cooking meals, and 3 years later, we had a kid, and like, that was just... It was just what I did. Like, I flew the coop, you know?
But she has...
Vanilla,
are you still on speakerphone?
She definitely is. But, like, she has us to fall back on.
Uh-huh.
And I'm afraid that I've, like, not taught her the proper shit, so that when she goes off on her own, she's going to be calling, like, you know, how do I turn a refrigerator on? You know?
That's how you'll know you didn't teach her. And it bounces out because she's ASCII then.
I mean, to be fair, everything is on Google now. Everything is on YouTube. Ashley has proven that if there's an issue, like our fridge didn't work, and she was like, I'm going to figure out what the fuck is wrong and I'm going to fix it. And she did because of YouTube.
Yeah.
A guy on YouTube now who I think is still freaking awesome. He's like, I can't remember his specific name, but he's like, he portrays himself as like YouTube dad. And the idea is like, he's there for all the kids whose fathers didn't teach them how to do stuff around the house. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you don't know how to, like, you know, change a faucet? YouTube dad will show you. Come check it out. He's like, and he's like, talks to you like, hey, is your dad over here? And it's just, it's something oddly wholesome about that. Mm-hmm. The fact that somebody was like, I know a lot of kids out there are very unequipped for, like, taking care of their homestead, and I can give them the tools with the internet. I could have used
the YouTube dad in the beginning.
Like, I still don't know how to tie a tie, so.
When David and I first moved in together, my idea of cooking dinner was Hamburger Helper without the hamburger. It was just flavored noodles. Just helper. Yeah.
I don't see the issue, like, right now.
Yeah. But like, it wasn't until we had a kid and needed to actually feed her healthy shit where I was like, oh fuck, we can't eat like that, you know. and suddenly had to get my shit together. So, you know, sometimes without that catalyst, I worry, like, she's never had the catalyst to make her go, oh shit, I need to know how to Google this. You know, we'll see what happens. Good luck to her.
Yeah.
Good luck to her.
Oh, she has a little bit of experience, though, because she's been doing a program called Upward Bound, where, like, every summer they get to go and live in a dorm for a month and, like, take classes, and then they have, like, the RAs who help them, you know, and they learn to live with other people outside of their families and manage money and take tests and
all things that none of us had. So that's
Absolutely. Like, one of the hardest things about going to college was just that I didn't know how to not be home. And so she's already got that experience. So she even goes this Sunday, we take her and drop her off for this year's Upward Bound. Last year they had to do it virtually, but this year she's all packed up. She gets to go live on campus again because she's already vaccinated. So
I just noticed that this is proof that there is a Cole story or segue for everything, because we just got a Cole story out of Tim. What is your plans for the week?
Cole tales.
Sorry.
No, that's a new segment of the show. We've got good pastor goodies. We've got Cole tales.
Tales of Cole Steel.
Oh, God. Why did I not nail that? That is perfect. Tales of Cole Steel. I'm sold. Every episode, she's got to have one. She's going to be like, I don't have much else to talk about. The chickens have done everything chickens can do.
I was looking through old pictures earlier and found one of my goats going down a slide on the playground.
Save that for next time. You're out of stories.
I will never run out of stories. I live in the middle of nowhere. Shit happens.
That's all she has.
Yeah. Like, this is the best part about being an Appalachian woman is your life is fucking insane.
Especially if you live in Appalachia. Let me stop. I'm terrible with all the pronunciations once I go past Maryland anyway, so I'm not going to knock you. Once I learned that Staunton is pronounced Stanton, I shut up and just walked. I was like, it's got a U in it. Nay, it's pronounced Stanton. Like, what? No.
That's like how people say Louisville. It's Louisville.
It's Louisville.
No, it's Louisville.
Louis is literally spelled with an E. Louis has an E in it.
It is Louisville. Not.
how do we wreck this harder? Like, we'll spell it like Louisville, but then we'll say Louisville, but then we'll get corrected and say Louisville.
Louisville.
See, even worse, I couldn't even remember the fake saying because of how bonkers it is. That's how it hits you. That's how it gets you. And that's why I just kind of accept that I won't be able to pronounce like 45% of the towns south of Maryland. And I get it. I'm cool with that.
Fortunately, I live in Texas where we have no aberrant spellings or speech patterns.
I just think it was pronounced Austin, but it's actually pronounced Assa.
The name for my town used to originally be like Old Mouth of the Hood Town Branch or something like that. It was just a ridiculous because it's like because it's at the mouth of a creek. So like it was just an insane combination of words. I have an actual book in there that's the history of this county, because people in this county are weirdly really proud about this county for no fucking reason. So I have like this 4,000 page book. It's just an insanely huge tome.
Jesus.
Of like everything that's ever, if a rabbit shit in the woods, somebody recorded it. And it is in this book.
September 1943, the moon was dark. A rabbit squatted.
Yeah. Basically. It's an incredibly cool book, but I have never managed to read through all of it. I usually just like find a section and go, that's weird, close it and put it back.
Oh, Chris, how was your week?
Too busy.
Helpful.
Oh yeah, I'm on a podcast. Thanks for
nothing.
I guess I should
way to converse.
No, I got to,
first time.
Actually got to hang out with friends over the weekend, which is really cool. Like the first time that's happened since the event.
The
before times.
Yeah. But yeah, it was really cool. And yeah,
Ashley and I went to a Denny's and it felt like a whole new world.
From where you came from? Or a fantastic point of view.
Whole new breakfast slamming thing.
It's like, I don't know where to go from here. So breakfast.
Yeah, I meant to put the breakfast slam at the end and I forgot the word. This is why I don't improvise.
Ashley got the lumberjack slam, not realizing it came with literally everything on the menu. It's I thought it was just one of the three. It's like, no, you get all three of the meat.
Wow.
I thought it was fries or pancakes. No, you get them both. You get everything.
It's
good shit.
I went to a breakfast place lately, and like, okay, so there's expectations in the Deep South about breakfast foods, right? Like, people can't seem to shut up about them. And so I thought it was very odd that I went to a breakfast place in Texas and was like, I'm going to have the bacon and eggs and biscuits and gravy. And like the waiting person had such struggles because they were like, nobody's ever ordered the biscuits and gravy while I've worked here. I was like, what?
What? Wow.
How? You work?
I know. I should have, I didn't pursue the line of questioning too much further. I was just like, oh, well, it's right here. It's on the menu. Like, they had to read the menu with me.
Did you ask if you just started yesterday? Like,
that's what I'm thinking. Cause it's like, I was like, yeah, it's biscuits and gravy and eggs and bacon as described on your menu. Here it is.
Jeez.
It's on my phone because I scanned the QR code because that's how things
fucking
work now.
Yeah!
Thank God I have a cell phone.
Thank God also for Root Beer is My Jam, who just subbed for the 25th month. That is insane. Thank you so much, Root Beer.
Wow.
Pernell, we got a fucking yeah sound clip. Do you want to give a fucking yeah as well?
It's adequate. This is what I had to. I don't want to be predictable.
Yeah.
Well, good thing I have a sound clip.
Fucking yeah!
We can force you to be predictable.
Let's hear what Pernell has to say.
Agree, right, Pernell?
Fucking yeah! No yeah!
I guess there's one other thing, is that finally, after a year and a half, Nintendo had their Super Nintendo Switch controllers back in stock, so I bought a couple.
They were in stock? Son of a...
Yeah.
They're out of stock, aren't they?
I don't know.
Of course they are by now, but you should check anyone.
But I tweeted about them, and I posted about it on Facebook.
Oh,
it's true. Like, I even knew he had it. He set the bells.
I have a few friends that were
when
like...
He saw them and posted when he got them.
I have a few friends that were like, oh, I was able to get some thanks to you. And I was like, yeah.
I need to pay attention to social media more.
Well, just me. I'm the one that's helpful.
Or me. Those other people, fuck them.
Yeah, you don't have to like commit to like all the social media. Hang on. Nintendo Switch, SNES.
Oh, it looks like they are still in stock.
I figured they would be. I think they like just straight up
jump on this.
Yeah, they're in stock.
Huh.
I was going to say, cuz I mean, I think that they just closed down like the production of them and now they reopened it, and so they're probably going to be in stock for a while.
I'm always so torn on that stuff, though, because on one hand, it's like, yay, nostalgia is cool. On the other hand, I'm like, well, our controls have improved on that design now. Like, we're past that.
But so many Super Nintendo games on Switch, and the controllers are great. I mean, they're fantastic. And
you have a pro controller, though, right?
Yeah, but I mean, a pro controller when you're trying to play, like, oh, I don't know, Mega Man X or something. Like, there's something about the original controls that's, you know, because and some
that
games like some
feel,
yeah, you know, and it just
feels, you know, right.
Yeah, and nobody needs.
Don't judge
it.
People, Pernell.
It's not judgment.
You're
it's
so like judgy. Little, you're so judgmental.
Guess what? You're fuck judgy everybody. I judgmental. Am judgmental. I'm the most judgmental motherfucker you ever met.
You're judgiest.
I want to be serious, but I can't, because now I want to lead into being judgmental. I don't know what to do.
could unleash that level of judgmentalness on some video games.
Oh, man, look at Tim just wanting to dive right in. Should we get to the reviews?
Wanting to dive right in 20 minutes into the show. Wanting to skip all the bull crap.
But you don't get to hear about my garbage
Mr.
kids.
Velocity.
With the things I'm discovering about Garbage Pail Kids lately, that to me is that's like
I will
the
say
thing
that
I got going on right now.
Real quick, that is interesting as fuck that you have such a rare and expensive card, and you're just like holding it, like, hey, look what the fuck I have.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not in a card protector.
it's in a binder on my kitchen table.
That should be in like 2-inch thick plastic.
but here's the thing. I discovered something else today. I just posted on Facebook too recently, so I didn't know this until recently, but apparently there was a Michael Jordan documentary recently.
Yes.
Maybe in the last month or two.
It was like a year ago.
Well, if it's been a year ago, this is even crazier, because what happened was apparently there is a Garbage Pail Kid from 2015 that featured Michael Jordan. And that Garbage Pail Kid, even the base forms of it, are selling for like not a crazy amount. We're talking like $50 or so. And here's where it gets crazier. So I went to go check my box of that series. I'm like, okay, I have one of each A and B. I don't want to give those up because I want to have a complete set. But I don't have a complete set, but I could have sworn I did. So I went to go look, and I found another box of the same series that I never opened. Like, I bought two boxes by accident. I don't want to say by accident, but just I forgot I had the second box.
Yeah, you know who you are.
You bought a thing and didn't open it?
You just have an unopened box of Garbage Pail Kids cards.
Yeah, and that box recently that sold for $800.
Know about.
Yeah. Didn't know about it. It was just on my shelf with all the other boxes of Garbage Pail Kids I had.
What the fuck else is on your shelf, man? Do you have, like, the Holy Grail on your shelf?
Probably behind that other box of Garbage Pail Kids.
The Cure for Cancer is hidden on Purnell's shelf. I bought the
Ark of the Covenant, but I haven't opened it yet.
Well, that could be a relief. I don't think anybody wants me to open that thing. Danger looms, baby. But,
But yeah, the fact that you still have a face, yes, you haven't opened it yet.
But like I was all preparing to open the box. I was like, I wonder if I can complete my set by opening this box. And I was like, wait a minute, before opening the box, I should go online and see if it's selling for anything since it's got that Michael Jordan card in it. And sure enough, someone sold theirs for $800. Another guy sold his for $600. I'm like, do I really want that card that badly to open this box up, or should I just fucking flip it? So it's probably going to hit the auction block soon. First thing I want to do is go to the collector's group and see if I can find like the maybe two or three cards I'm missing from the set and see if anyone's like, here, Purnell, give them to you.
You should see if there's any singles that if the singles selling the singles would make it worth more than selling the box. But the problem is you don't know what's in the box, I guess.
Also, the fact that it's, when you get to the later series of Garbage Pail Kids, the majority of the allure comes from saying, I can open it myself and slap the packs and all that good stuff, so people want to pay. It's almost like when people buy shrink-wrapped video games, when they could just buy it used, but still in a case with cart. It's like, but I want to open it and smell the benzene or whatever the fuck it is that they smell. And so that's the allure. They want to crack all 24 packs of cards. They want to say, oh, I got this cool hit. I got a sketch out of this box. And they get all
giddy. You want the experience of opening the cards. You know, just exactly. Walk the cards. Yeah.
Exactly. So it's like in that regard, I can't fathom there being a card in this box that's that with a good odds of me getting it, mind you, because there could be like a sketch or something in here, but where the odds are in my favor to versus just selling the box if I'm going for an actual monetary value. So
I sell the box.
And then I'm going to have to go check and see if I got any other unopened Garbage Pail Kid boxes up there, because I could have that. Because there was a period where I was like, I need to get two hobby boxes to make sure I get a full set. And then I got burned out after opening the first box. Like, I don't need to open the second. I'll just do it later. And then later never came. So I was like, whoops, you got money on the shelf. But unlike with video games where you have one and that's it, I have a second box. So if this game went away, I wouldn't care.
Well, speaking of games with a lot, the first game that we could talk about tonight is a big compilation of games. Everyone ready to dive into the reviews?
Well, I don't want to dive. That hit hard when I hit the ground. I just want to walk into the reviews. Is that okay?
Tim, you could choke him if you want.
No, it's fine. He doesn't have to be ready because he's not up first.
Oh, touche. He can hit the pavement first. Go for it. Smash.
All right. First game to talk about tonight is called Capcom Arcade Stadium, developed and published by Capcom, released May 25th for Xbox One, PS4, and PC. Is a free-to-download title with 1943. There's three packs of 10 games that are $14.99 each or $39.99 for all three. Shooters, fighting, action, all your favorite genres in this exciting collection. Capcom Arcade Stadium brings back all the nostalgia of the arcade while adding in new and exciting features you'll wish you had back then. Tim, tell us about your time with Capcom Arcade Stadium.
Yes, we all wish we had infinite quarters back then.
You're goddamn right.
Of course.
Set, as Chris would call it.
Just being able to drop quarter after quarter after quarter into an arcade game. Of course you want that feature. Why wouldn't you? All right, yeah, Capcom Arcade Stadium. This is their latest compilation thing. Came out on Switch a little while ago. They're approaching it with the DLC model instead of a just buy-it-all model, you know, like they would back in the day, like the old Capcom Classic.
I think it was released the same way on the Switch, where they had three stadium packs.
I'm saying in comparison to, like, you know, older compilations where they just, you know, you spent $40 for the games, where in this case you can download something and then, you know, kind of, you know, pick out in packs, I guess. Pick in packs. So, yeah, well, I guess we'll get into the games second, and we'll get into the feature set first. So, what you get in this game, there's 30-ish games available in total, if you include, like, the freebies that are in there. I think Ghosts and Goblins is also free.
I think it's on sale for $1, or it was on sale for $1. I think it might be full price again.
Oh, my. Either way. There's a couple free bay. The funny thing is, when it came out on Switch and, like, 1943 was the free game, I'm like, oh, that's the game I would want the most, so I win right off the bat. So if you just want 1943, good news for you, buy it for free.
Yeah.
Anyways, there's 30 games total, and when you get in there, it kind of will organize them into, like, a virtual arcade lineup, where you'll see, like, a cabinet with the game playing on it, and you can just kind of go down the row and it'll be playing. It's a track mode or whatever. You can customize the look of the arcade machines. They have, by default, they're in, like, Astro City, you know, the sit down Japanese style arcade cabs. They have some more American style that you might be familiar with, like a stand up arcade cabinet, which come in a different color varieties. There's a few different ones in there. I was slightly bummed that they're just, like, generic, like they aren't, like the actual cabinets that the games were in back in the day. I think that would have been a little bit cooler, but that's just me. But you can set it, so your arcade, you can set it so they have like each game is in a random cabinet. You can set it so they all look, you know, in the stand-up style, or all the Astro City style, or, you know, whatever. There's, like, seven different cabinet styles in the game that you can set up to, if you want to customize how your arcade looks. When you get into a game, or when you, you know, select a game, you then have options for, you know, difficulty and a couple different modes you can get into, or just, like, a classic arcade mode, which is, you know, just playing the game as it was, or you can do, like, a score attack or time attack thing. There's a decent amount of view customization options in terms of, like, do you want the illusion of being seated at an arcade machine where the screen is kind of tilted back away from you a bit and you see the edges of the cabinet and you kind of see the controls in front of you? Or do you just want the game on your screen? You don't care about, you know, that level of immersion, quote unquote. And, you know, some different frames that you can use. You can put different, like, scan line filters on the games. You can flip the screen every which way if you want to turn your monitor television sideways to play shooters in vertical mode. You can do that. Go nuts. Rip your TV. and what's cool is that, like, once you have a view that you like, you can set that for every game. Just across the board. You don't have to individually set it for every single game, though you can if you want to. If you want different games to have different settings, that is your choice. Once you get into the games, there is, of course, there's infinite credits. There's no limit on how many quarters you can drop in. It does have you manually drop quarters in at the push of a button. it wants to make you feel the weight of dropping in that fake money into the machine to get your credits and then hitting start. Each game does have a rewind feature, so you just hold down the right trigger and the game will rewind. Just so if you get you know, shot in 1941 or whatever shooter game, your ship blows up and you want to say, I want to pretend that didn't happen, you just hold down that quick rewind and it'll just go right back and you can get right back into the action. Doing that will, you know, it penalizes you for getting, like, high scores to post on the internet and like some of the achievement shit, but that's fine if you just want to, like, get through these games and it's a nice convenient, like, one button press thing on every single game. You just hit that R button and backwards you go. Each game does have some instructions on, like, here's what this game is and when it came out and the type of game that it is. And then it'll go through a few pages and kind of show you what the, you know, if, what the power-ups are, if applicable, what the buttons are, and all that good stuff, so you know what you're doing when you jump into a game. The game selections themselves come in packs of 10 if you're not buying the whole package, at $15 a piece. So the, and they're kind of packaged by eras. So the first one is all 80s stuff. That is probably the most skippable if you are going to purchase these a la carte. Like, I mean, it's, you know, a lot of games that are solid, but not exceptional, like not necessarily things you need to go back to. Like, I don't care for the arcade version of Bionic Commando anyways.
Vulgus is not something I would.
Vulgus is not great. 1942 is okay, but you already have 1943.
Yeah.
You know, but it's a lot of games that are okay. Like Forgotten Worlds and Ghouls and Ghosts are pretty cool. But those are like the standouts of, and you know, Commando, I guess, is a classic as well. But, you know, it's just kind of like, you get into the middle pack.
How about the middle arcade pack, 89 to 92?
Yeah, so you're getting your Strider in there, Dynasty Wars, which is not Dynasty Warriors, Dynasty Wars, which is a beat-em-up Final Fight, of course, which you might have heard of. Some other shooters, mercs. Carrier Air Wing, I believe, is something that has not been released over here, which is like the sequel to UN Squadron, or it's that, but without the... Yeah, it's UN Squadron-ish, basically. Street Fighter II, which you may have heard of, Captain Commando.
Yeah, so the, the first of the multiple Street Fighter titles that we will see in this collection.
Yeah, the first of the multiple Street Fighter titles, because then you get into the Arcade Evolutionary, which is 92 through 2000, through 2001, and then you get two Street Fighter titles. You get Turbo and you get Super Turbo. And this pack is kind of the most interesting to me. Like, if I was going to recommend any one of them, it would be this one. I mean, go figure, it's the newest arcade machines, and I think it has the most games that have not been released, or at least, or at the very least, have not been released lately. I will say across the packs, like, if you bought that Capcom beat-em-up collection, like, a couple years ago, like, almost every one of those games is present here in the stadium,
yeah,
as it were, which included, you know, at the time that beat 'em up pack came out, it was kind of awesome because there wasn't, like, I don't think Warriors of Fate or Battle Circuit had been really Armored Warriors, I think, is the other one. Like, a few of them had not really been released anywhere, and it was like, oh cool, here's these beat 'em ups, and now here they are again in this. But you do have things like Pro Gear, which were not released in the U.S. On home consoles. You have Giga Wing, which has not been seen in the U.S. for a very long time, and is pretty expensive if you're buying the Dreamcast copy, which is, I believe, the only North American official version there is. And like, oh yes, people, I know what emulators are. Jesus fucking Christ. If you're just going to emulate games, just shut up and move on later in the podcast.
You weren't going to buy this anyway if you're a filthy emulator.
I get it. Which is fine. If that's what you want to do, that's fine. You've probably already been playing these games, but if that's not your bag or you don't want to deal with it, then, you know, that's what we're looking at. Anyway, Cyberbots is on there, which you, if you've played Marvel vs. Capcom and you were wondering where this Jin guy came from, it's this game. And I had never played that before, and it's a lot of fun. That's a really fun game. just really fun fighting. You pick your pilot, and then you've got a bunch of different robots to pick between, and I thought that game was a lot of fun. That was kind of the one I ended up playing the most. So you kind of have the option of like looking at these packs and making a judgment call as to like how many of these games appeal to you that they are worth your $15. Like, do you just want to like go in for the whole thing? Or maybe just get a couple of them. Like, if you're just cutting out the 80s pack, then you're still spending $30 on you know, the other two, or if you just want to grab one of them, then, you know, it's 15. So it is kind of nice that you can mix and match, as it were.
What is your recommendation on this? First off, it's a free to download 1943, so you might as well just do that.
Yes, yeah, you might as well just get the thing on your system and get.
How do you handle the DLC packs? Do you buy one of them, two of them, or do you splurge and get the whole pack?
I think my thrifty ass would most say definitely buy it for the quote arcade evolution one, which is the most recent one, because that is the most interesting lineup to me. It might be a little bit less interesting if you just bought that beat 'em up collection, because like three of those games are in there. But who knows how many copies of Street Fighter. Do you have Street Fighter 2 on your latest console yet? Who knows? I don't know. I mean, this sent me on like a whole existential crisis of like how many ways I own Street Fighter 2 and like don't even fucking think about it anymore. How many compilations and like, you know, in terms of like both Street Fighter compilations and then Capcom compilations and then re-releases. And I feel like I have it on every console I own at least twice.
Yeah, probably. Like, well, you have it probably. Three times in this.
It's ridiculous. Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, if you're buying all of it, you get it three different kinds. I don't know why you're going to play Street Fighter 2 if you have Hyper Fighting, unless you don't get that particular pack. But you should, because I think that's the one you should most get. The Arcade Revolution one, which is the middle pack, is still probably worth buying. Again, it has a couple of those arcade beat 'em ups in there. But it does have some new stuff. It does have a copy of Street Fighter 2, Striders, you know, pretty good game. That's kind of my thought. The oldest one is skippable, unless you really want those games, or you just, if you're already in for 30 and you're like, what's 10 more bucks, then yeah, sure, go for it. You're not going to like cry over it. But it's solid and you know, the compilation has a solid feature set for playing around with these games. You know, it's not as extensive a museum as the SNK collection from a couple years ago, which still wears the
gold
championship belt of best compilation ever. But you know, it's still pretty good.
Overall, it's a worthwhile collection.
It's worth throwing some money at. Yeah, and I believe they are releasing more packs at some point.
That is what I've heard. I hope they do. I would love to see them continue to support this, and I will pick up whatever packs and
yeah. There's cool more. They have more arcade out.
Games. They have more Street Fighter games to release.
More Street Fighter games. You know, if you can, you know, get. What I really want, and it doesn't even have to be in this pack. What I really want is a compilation of like their, like the X-Men Marvel superhero series. Like you just have to go X-Men Children of the Atom up to Marvel versus Capcom. I'll be happy. You don't have to include Capcom 2, though you probably should. But like that series of games, I would love to have. In one single compilation would be amazing. So yeah, do that pack.
Don't they have those together on the arcade stand-up machine, the arcade 1-Up?
Yes, there is an arcade 1-Up that has, I don't remember how many of them it has on there, but yeah, that has some of them, yes.
So your verdict on the arcade
1-Up? On the arcade 1-Up, I mean, yeah, if you want to spend $500 on a...
I've been tempted to pick up some of those things. Oh, if I had the disposable income, our basement would be, oh Jesus, it would.
Fucking anyway, yeah,
Carnage just subbed. Yeah, thank you so much, right Carnage, there. For the sub. God. 10 months. Thank you, man. Good to see you here. Thank you for dropping by. But we got to move on. We just talked about Capcom. We got to talk about Earth Defense Force now. With God Earth Defense,
why'd you have to tell me that? Son of a bitch. Now I'm looking at it.
Earth Defense Force World Brothers, developed by Yuke's, published by D3 Publisher, released May 27th on Switch, PS4, and PC for $59.99. A new EDF adventure begins, only this time the action unfolds in a parallel world where the Earth is made of digital blocks, Cole's favorite visual style. This world has befallen into chaos as the once peaceful square Earth has been shattered into pieces. Shape aside, it is an Earth nonetheless, which needs to be defended. That is where Purnell comes in. Purnell, tell us about your time with Earth Defense Force World Brothers.
Well, Earth Defense Force as a franchise has been something that I have appreciated for what it does, but one of the few things about that generally always made me feel kind of like meh. Is that it carried a very, like, a kind of drab style. Like, it was always, like, dark colors, like, very... Even though it was a very silly franchise, visually, it looks like it's taking itself very seriously. You know, like, oh, my God, the soldiers are fighting ants or whatever. But this game surprisingly hit some really good notes for me. Like, there is not a lick of seriousness in this entire game. It's absurd in the best way possible. the idea is that, like you described, the Earth has been blown up into multiple blocky segments by some weird space villain, and you are now part of the new Earth Defense Force. But whereas in the old games you were soldiers, fighting a good fight, in this game you are a bunch of blocky characters, some of which are representative of like characters from the old Earth Defense Force games, but other characters that you're trying to find and recruit are referred to as brothers and sisters, like literally brothers and sisters in that context. And they are all essentially like world referencing stereotypes. So like you'll have like a Holland character, a character from Holland. They're referred to as Tulip Sisters, and their super move is a giant windmill that blows tornadoes. Like the U.S. representative is like Texas Brother, who fires a pistol, and he's trying to save his cows. Like just weird nonsense.
Texas pretty accurate.
It's not weird if you live in Texas.
I mean, the only thing that he's missing, he's not talking about barbecue though. Maybe there was a part of the dialogue I didn't hear where he will say, "Oh man, I got to take you guys to a barbecue after this." Like there it is, Texas done. But they lean hard on the hamming of the character dialogue and their interactions, which is not a bad thing, because again, the whole premise of this game is just genuinely very lighthearted. But of course, some people are like, enough about that. How the hell is the game actually play? And the way the game plays is actually pretty cool too. So every time you go into the game, you have to choose four people to constitute a team, quote unquote. These are four characters that you generally will find. Well, I'll get into that in a second, but you basically initially start with like only one, two, like one character. It's like a general soldier. And he runs out in the field and he has like a dodge roll move. He can run. He can fire his gun. He can jump. And of course, he has this like super move when he gets enough shots to charge it up. And enemies are coming out like pretty much out of every orifice, whether it's like giant bugs or giant robots or giant other bugs or hives, anything that you can think of, probably you're probably going to fight it in this game. And you're generally attacking them with your firearms and your super moves. However, on occasion, you'll find someone in need of help on the ground. Typically, there's three per stage. And when you see them on your map, you run over to them, you rescue them, and they officially join your team. And that's how you start to fill out your roster. So you might come across, El Chaka or El Dorado Brother or Space Brother, just lying on the ground in need of help. And then you rescue them. And now they can be a part of your team. Now, at first, when everyone comes and they have some basic stats, they have their armor level, which is pretty much how much damage they can take. They have a speed stat, a jump stat. I guess the ability stat just refers to how cool their ability is or how well it works. I don't quite know. I mean, honestly, this kind of game, it could well be something like that. This guy's thing is really cool. That's why he's got 8 blocks. And there's the SP move stat, which likely refers to how powerful or how cool his SP move is. So you have these characters, and as you play them on stages and complete them, they will gain armor experience as well as skill experience. Armor experience is literally what it sounds like. Their armor stat goes up, which means they can take more damage. So if you come across some guys you like, grind it out with them. They'll get higher armor, and they can take on harder levels or higher difficulties on those levels. The skill stat refers to weapons that they can equip. So at the beginning, every character has a default weapon type they can equip. But as their skill level goes up, they can equip other weapon types. So you might have a guy who starts out using like artillery, but now all of a sudden they want to start using rocket launchers because they have the skill level for it. So now you want to start equipping with rocket launchers in this. There's a lot of surprise, despite the fact that the characters really are meant to be like shuffled in and out. There is still a surprising amount of customization available in this game. There's even accessories you can equip in addition to different weapons you can equip. Some weapons have move sets, like mainly the melee weapons, I think, have move sets, and then others are just like bang, bang, bang. And of course, when you have to reload your weapon, you don't even have to stay on the character, because when you pick your set of four characters, you can switch to them on the fly. Like, you can just be like, I don't want to use this guy anymore. I want to use that guy. So you push right. And now you're using El Dorado Brother. I just love El Dorado Brother. And he just, like, goes out there. You're tired of him. You're like, Tulip Sister's running around. She's doing her thing. and what have you. And it's just really nice to be able to just shuffle around characters and not really feel burnt out. And even when you're not actually using them like that, they're still out there firing their guns and shooting. So even if you're not controlling them, they're doing their jobs. And it's a nice bit of chaos on the screen. And even though we didn't get to do multiplayer, I did read up a little bit on that and how it works. And what I was happy to hear is that with the multiplayer in this game, every player gets their four people. So if you end up with four people playing the game, you've technically got, like, I mean,
16 like, people.
Well, yeah, just run around. Huh. I love it. Thanks for doing it. I'm like, for the record, everybody, I do know math. It was just, I wanted to make sure that this is four players and not like two max. But, yeah, you'll have 16 different characters going bonkers and firing their guns.
Maybe it is just two. Maybe it is eight.
Honestly, and then whoever number of players it is, all four of their guys come out and they go bang, bang, pew, pew. And it's freaking great by concept alone, because the game, even in single player, has been a great time for me. I like the idea of just booting it up and being really silly with it and just running around shooting stuff and having the characters say their wacky quips and statements. The only thing that's killing me, there's like two things that suck about it for me, and it's not even really sucking as far as like the game's quality, it's just annoyances. So the first guy you start with has like a run button option. He's like, his SP is like a dodge roll and a run, and you hit like the L3 button, he can start running. And of course you're going to run to make the cover ground quickly. I don't really generally seem to come across other character type classes or character classes that have that ability too. Like, there's some that can fly, there's some that can grapple like off of walls and stuff, but he's the only one, and others like him, mind you, like from that same character type class, that can sprint and dash, which means that I feel like I always want to have at least one of them on my team just to cover ground.
Yeah.
Like, I think you said you had it too. Like, did you notice a similar problem? Like, you wanted to be able to run? And
I wanted to be able to run more, but I hated how anytime there was any kind of new story pop up or cutscene, it would stop you and you had to start running again, because I think just the standard movement is a little on the slow side.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. So like when I would play, the way that I'm doing things was like, I always had, you know, Speedy McGee to cover ground. And then when I needed to fight guys, I would switch to somebody, but I was willing to accept at that point that I'm going to take some hits because my guys aren't rolling they're not rolling fast enough for me. So, and it has me genuinely wondering, like, am I missing something? Am I able to upgrade one of their stats unexpectedly? And they're going to sound like, because they all have speed stats, mind you. So it's like, is it a matter of this upgrading their speed stats somehow or giving them an accessory, which admittedly still wouldn't fix the fact that I have too many slow ass characters.
Yeah.
But that's like the one main annoyance I have in the game. And maybe if they're listening, they could even fly out just say, look here, doofus, maybe what you're supposed to do is press the L4 button. And like, oh, wow, that's secret buttons now. But then the other thing, and this is just me, not a fault of the game, mind you, is just that I get really caught up in like stats of weapons and like choosing what to give a person. I almost wish Tulip Sister only had one gun for that type of gun, so I wouldn't have to think about, like, okay, I can use this gun or these other five, and their stats are different, and they fire differently. What do I use? And then, of course, you got like five other characters you want to use, so, like, choosing what gun each of those guys should be using as well, and you can decision get caught up in just paralysis. Like weapons. Yes, I'm terrible with analysis paralysis. I hate it, but that's a personal problem, not a game problem. As far as I'm concerned, as this game goes, though, I think it's actually a lot of fun. And it feels like a breath of fresh air for the franchise, too. It's lively. It's colorful. I actually laughed and smiled at some of the dialogue that came through on the characters. I like the fact that all the characters themselves are, like, world-themed. And I just like how silly it all is. And yeah, it is
I have a feeling that the shift in visual style is going to be a love it or hate it kind of thing. I think it's a good thing. I think it's time that the franchise looks how it plays and how it feels with such a lighthearted atmosphere. Now, this is like the first family-friendly Earth Defense Force game that your kids could play because it's not bloody and gory. It's
They were pretty drab, you know.
Uh-huh. That's just,
yeah. Well, I thought that, you know, Earth Defense Force in the past was pretty drab, so.
Oh, yeah.
I think a, you know, new coat of paint is nothing but a good thing.
Oh, for sure. Like, I agree. And the thing about it is, like, even if people are like, I don't like this, this is too colorful, who's said he won't just, like, crank out one of each type? I mean, it can't be. I don't think that. I feel like they have this thing down to a size. If they want to turn out an Earth Defense Force game in the classic style, it wouldn't break their backs to do it. So, if their money, if the profit's there for them, they'll still do it. So, but if it's not, if you see World Brothers 2 Brother Harder, well, guess what? You know where the money came again. From. Big brother. But like, yeah, like it, you'll see right then and there. Well, clearly this worked because they're making a direct sequel with this style of gameplay and great in graphics. So we'll find out for sure. But as far as I'm concerned, this is where they should be going with it. They should do more of this kind of stuff and expand on the character types and just give them more abilities and make everyone able to run. Jesus Christ.
Well, $60 on this one. What is your verdict?
I'd say it's a buy it.
All right.
I thought you had more to that.
I was thinking about it, but I stopped. But I was going to say, even if you think $60 is too much, I mean, sales will happen. Get it on a sale. But ultimately, I think it's a game you should buy. It's silly fun.
Cool. All right, next game to talk about is Ghosts and Goblins Resurrection, developed and published by Capcom, released June 1st for Xbox One, PS4, and PC for $29.99. Watch as this nostalgic yet completely reimagined storybook world unravels before your very eyes, taking cues from both Ghosts and Goblins and Ghouls and Ghosts and giving birth to something entirely new. Resurrection is a title worthy of its name. Tim, tell us about Ghosts and Goblins Resurrection.
Yeah. Borrowing. All right. Hey, Capcom. Welcome back to the show again. So if you're not familiar with Ghosts and Goblins, which you might be from it being featured in recent compilations, as recently as ones I talked about earlier in the show, this is a classic, I'm going to say super hard, pretty freaking hard action platformy series from back in the 80s, back in that first pack of games that I wasn't as hot on. that's where this comes from. Where you're Arthur, this, you know, brave knight, going across the land, whipping weapons at guys in a side-scrolling format, and, you know, it's... Yeah, the game series has a rep for being hard, and this game is still hard as fuck. It's really hard. It has, you know, concessions to ease up on you a little bit, but, you know, it kind of happens in, like, awkward ways. Like, Ghosts and Goblins doesn't actually know how to be nice to people, so it still seems mean sometimes. to get into the game. So this game has a pretty cool graphical style that some people took one look at it when it was initially unveiled and hated it. But in practice, like, I really enjoy it. It's a really striking 2D look. It kind of looks like a Terry Gilliam, like, Monty Python animation going on the screen. But, like, it looks really cool. Like, when you're playing the game, it really kind of stands out in that it's not, like, perfect. It's just, like, it's kind of, like, janky looking and gives the world, like, a really weird look to it. That's kind of obviously a little bit hard to explain, even though that's my job. either way, I think it looks really good. Like, you know, the environments are very well detailed. The monsters are very well detailed. But they all stand out well enough that, you know, you see them and can identify them on the screen. It does, as the copy alluded to, weave in a lot of elements from the early games, some things very directly. Like when you first start the game out, you have a choice of two paths. There's like an upper path and a lower path, and the upper path is basically the Ghosts and Goblins path, and the lower path is the Ghouls and Ghosts path, at least for the first couple of stages. And they're not like straight, like beat for beat remakes of those stages, but they're thematically pretty close. The bosses are thematically pretty close, if not, you know, it's the same bosses, just like in a different, with some different routines to them. But then eventually, you know, it does get to some completely new and original stages, to just, you know, pound your shit straight into the dirt. like, holy crap. The first one is the third stage, and, like, it has this whole mechanic with, like, light and dark, and there's, like, these candles, and you can't jump on the candle because fires will hurt you, but you have to, like, extinguish the candles by throwing a weapon at them, but then you can't see, and it's just a nightmare as things are materializing from every which way, and the game is just going hard on you. It's rough. So the game, you get in there, like I said, it's just hard. Kind of the thing about, I enjoy me a lot of Dark Souls, you know, but you know,
Souls of Ghosts and Goblins?
No, because, you know, when I think of Dark Souls and when I think of a lot of hard games, I think, you know, you think of, like, tough but fair. Ghosts and Goblins is tough and also unfair sometimes. It's just fucking unfair. Because one of the things that, like, these games do is they have sections where just, like, enemy mobs can randomly spawn in. And so it's like you'll go to jump, and when you jump, this game has no double jump. It does not have, like, the double jump from Super Ghouls and Ghosts, which I wish it had, because that was a good double jump and was a lot of fun. But it's like once Arthur's feet leave the ground, he is jumping in that arc, and nothing is going to stop or save him if something changes in the game while you are in the air, such as, like, the second you hit the jump button and, like, oh, like, a ghost is materializing in right in the arc of your jump, or a zombie is coming up out of the ground right where you're going to land. And on the default difficulty, like, even on the default difficulty, it can just be brutal with, like, how much stuff is happening. Like, in that aforementioned candle stage, like, there are bats dropping down from the ceiling. There are zombies coming up out of the ground. You are trying to manage so much stuff, and it is just, like, it is so tough to keep track of everything going on the screen. So inevitably, when you die a bunch of times, the game will be like, hey, you want us to lower the difficulty for you? And you will be like, yes,
please,
sir. Yes, please. You may lower the difficulty for me. I will take it. I will not feel ashamed by it, because this game is just so goddamn hard. On top of lowering the difficulty for you, it does seem to be fairly generous with its checkpointing. There are more than just, like, and I kind of infer that when you get to higher difficulty levels, it's going to pull some of these checkpoints out, because they have different designations. Like, it's a little flagpole, and some of them are blue and some of them are red. And, like, you always have the option when you die to go back to, well, if the most recent flagpole was a red one, to go back to that one, or to go back to the blue one, which is the beginning of the area, quote unquote. Which I did do at times, because sometimes you get a weapon in these games that is just not appropriate for what you are fighting at that time. And so I did have, like, at least one instance where I was like, okay, I just need to go back to where I know there's some treasure chest that drops some weapons so I can get something different. Cause what I have, this
working.
The short range hammer is just not going to do it. Not a fan. You can also, in the older games, like, usually one hit would knock your armor off, and this, you get two. It'll either knock off your pants or your shirt with the first two, which is, I think, something they did in that PSP game, but either way, that's nice that you have a little bit of leeway there. You also have infinite guys, so it's you don't have, like, a life limit that you need to, you know, to get through a level on.
So as long as you're tenacious, you can
get through it. You will, and that's the thing. At the end of the, like, it's hard, but, like, I did kind of and that's what I was thinking about as I was going through the aforementioned candle level, because I sat down and, like, played that in one sitting, so I was very aware of how much time I was spending on it. Like, it took me, like, an hour to get to the boss of just, like, brute forcing my way through the level. So it's, like, it's not insurmountable. Of course, I did lower the difficulty, not ashamed to say, but, like, because then, like, less things, less projectiles start spawning. It is a noticeable difference. With practice and kind of learning where things are going to happen, you're going to figure your way how to maneuver through a level. It's not like you will get your head through the wall eventually. The biggest thing this game adds, though, is these, like, throughout the levels, and they'll tell you how many are each level, there's these little fairy things that will pop out and float around, and some of them are hidden, like you need to, like, hit your weapon against a certain spot for it to pop out of the background. And the nice thing is when you grab one, like, you got it. Like, even if you... I have suicide grabbed many of these fairies. It's like, as soon as one's on the screen, like, I'm going for it. My life be damned. Because once you got it, you got it. It saves if you die, and that's a great thing. So then you take these fairies, and there is like there's a skill tree, which is literally a tree, which lets you unlock magic spells and abilities. And the magic spells are not overpowering. They can be a little awkward to use because you have to charge them before you unleash them. But, you know, they have different effects. Like, they'll, create like a fire on either side of you. They'll shoot lightning across the screen. They'll turn like all the basic enemies into like frogs, or turn them to stone, or it'll make Arthur move faster, which is good because he is so slow. This motherfucker is so goddamn slow. there's one that will restore your armor. That is very high on the tree. I have not unlocked that yet. I've not gotten that many fairies. And I want to see like what the limitation is to that I'm not thinking of, because that seems really overpowered. Maybe it has like a super long cooldown. But they have one where you can hold two different weapons and switch between them, which is very useful if you want to have something like a little more close range and something, you know, farther range that shoots a little faster. That is a nice bit of versatility to have. There's one that like will reveal hidden treasure chests, and like as you unlock them, like you can switch between them on the fly. It doesn't limit how many of these you can equip, which is really cool. And that is kind of the big fun thing that they've added to this game to give Arthur some sort of progression for a change. And that's pretty neat and adds a lot of cool decisions and gameplay to the game that they did not have before.
Cool. Well, the game is sitting at $30. Do you think this is a price tag that is welcoming to all audiences, or might it scare off some
all
newcomers?
Audiences shouldn't play this. If you don't want a game that's really hard, you shouldn't buy this. But if you're up for a challenge, like, you should definitely buy it. You will get your value out of it, because the game is going to drag you out. it is going to make you put hours into the game in order to learn how it works and get to the end. And you will get there. And then once you get there, you can start jacking up that difficulty. There is surely hidden things. The way these games work, it's never as straightforward as you just get to the end and beat the game. Usually you have to get through it twice in a fucking row in order to get the true ending. But yeah, if you're interested in all of the, like, kind of the initial impressions I heard when the game came out on Switch were like mostly like negative, and I don't know why in retrospect, because I guess if you just don't like the style of game, which is totally fine, if you're up for a challenge, if you're up for a good looking, fun to play, sort of fun to play action platformer, like, yeah, it's totally worth it. It seems like a real good entry in the series after so long.
Awesome. All right. Next up is Made of Skr, developed and published by Wales Interactive, released May 26th on Xbox Series X and PS5 for $24.99. Set in 1898 and inspired by the haunting Welsh tale of Elizabeth Williams, this is a story of family empire driven by torture, slavery, piracy, and a supernatural mystery that suffocates the grounds of the hotel. Ol, tell us about your time with this one.
So, I played Made of Skr originally on the Xbox One S, and this time I got to play it on the Series X. There is a noticeable difference in my experience with the game. I felt when I played it on the 1S, there were a lot of times where I was like, you can't even tell what you're supposed to be doing, right? But on the Series X, there is a lot more ambient lighting, and the textures are a little more discernible. And I surprisingly did not feel as confused or frustrated as I did when I played it the last time, which was wonderful. I enjoyed the game so much more. unfortunately, there are still a couple of quirks that I had issues with. I wish they would have fixed those while they were polishing up everything else between the two versions.
Is this like a full on like Series X like upgrade re-release thing? Like if you had the original, you have this version, or
yeah,
okay,
yeah. So I didn't. I had it before, and I didn't have to buy it again or anything. Okay, like that.
Gotcha.
So it was just updated.
But but they put in some work for the
new consoles. And I would have liked to have seen them do just a smidge more. The main character is Thomas Evans. He receives a note that his love interest is locked away, or is at this hotel that's being reopened or whatever, and he comes to find out that she's locked away in the attic, right? And there are monsters roaming the halls, but none of them can actually see you. They all rely exclusively on hearing. So as long as you're quiet, you can get through the game. So one of the main mechanics is like you have to hold your breath, but if you hold it too long, then you take damage because you can't breathe. Which is all well and good. Certain things will trip you off. Like if you're in a dusty area, you'll start to cough and you need to cover your mouth. Or if there's smoke and you'll breathe that in and you'll start.
There's a button for covering your mouth.
There's a button. Yeah, to muffle your coughs. It's the same one as holding your breath. So, like, you pull the right trigger and he covers his face. which is good because the motherfuckers can hear you breathing. And they will come get you. One of the biggest things that I wish they would have added in is I wish they had added in some visual cues. I've mentioned before that because of my rheumatoid disease, like sometimes my eardrums around them swells up and I don't hear well. And there's a lot of emphasis on audio cues in some of the puzzles and just some of the general progression mechanics, especially because the enemies need to be able to hear you. So they put so much emphasis on those audio cues that they leave out any kind of indicator unless you're listening or able to hear it. You have no idea like where they're at until you straight up just walk up on top of one. That can lead to a lot of trial and error fuckery and maybe a few heart attacks if you're prone to getting jump scared. Because it is a horror game. It is supposed to just be gruesome and terrifying, and it has its moments. It was funny because I've played it before and I knew what to expect, and I still got to this one scene where one of the motherfuckers like lurches through a wall at you, and I gasped out loud, and number one come out of her room. She's like, "Are you okay?" And I was like, "Fucking game." I'm fine. Like, she was afraid I'd fell or something. But it was just that even though I was expecting it to happen because I'd played it before, it's such a creepy moment and it's done so well that it'll still at least knock the wind out of you. Which I really appreciate. And I know if Aki's listening, she's going to be like, Cole's a bitch, and I'm not. It takes a lot to scare me. And I think it's kind of a testament to Made of Scare that it managed to at least get me to gasp. I think normal people would probably fear pee a few times. There's definitely some fear pee moments. I will say still, though, that the main character, not my favorite character in the game, he's kind of just a lump on a log. And I mean, the whole fact that like he can be destroyed because of asthma kind of leaves a lot to be desired, right?
Yeah. Like,
he can be given away just by getting into an area that's too dusty. It's kind of hard to be like, that's a hero. But, at least it's a neat mechanic where, you know, you have to hold your breath or stifle your cough and have to be concerned with things like that. It lends more to the realism and the immersion than just, oh, hey, don't walk over a stick or something or the scary dude will get you. It's like, no, they legit fucking hear you breathe. Straighten your shit up. Some of the puzzles.
Get your inhaler.
Yeah. Get you an inhaler and get the fuck out, dude. Come on. Some of the puzzles, just like before, because everything relies so heavily on audio cues, they're still a little opaque and kind of hard to solve. Not anything you can't manage to do. At least at this point, there's guides out if you get stuck now. So you'll be able to figure it out somehow. But at least they do feel a little rewarding when you do finally get through them. Did you die, Joe? Are you okay?
No, I thought you were because your voice just got real.
Did I?
And then you just trailed off. And I didn't know if you, like...
No, I'm okay. I'm just struggling. I told you earlier off show that I've been in a flare for a while, and it's time for meds, is what I'm trying to say.
Well, Maid of Scare is $24.99 on Xbox Series X and PS5. It is a free upgrade if you already had it. So if you already had it, you're taken care of. For newcomers, $25. What do you say?
I do think if you haven't tried it out, this is one of the better Wales Interactive games, and that it's definitely worth the price tag.
Cool. Sounds good. All right. Next up is Aluna Sentinel of the Shards, developed by DigiArt Interactive and Enfusion Interactive, published by DigiArt Interactive. Released May 26th on Switch and Steam for $19.99. 16th century mysticism, magic, and the unknown plague the land. You play this epic story-driven action RPG as our heroine, Aluna, as she tries to defend a mystical shard that possesses the power of Earth within it. Tim, what does that mean?
All right, so I reviewed this game on Switch, just to get that out of the way. So yeah, this game is a lot like it's a lot like Diablo. It's that sort of game. It is a overhead, moving around, beating up enemy mobs. They drop loot. Is loot better than what you have? Yes, then equip. If no, then sell or break down for parts, as it were. It is, you know, a game where you find extra abilities and magic spells to upgrade your character as you continue forth through this world and story. The thing, the game takes place in, yeah. Oh, geez. Oh, no, the hiccups showed up and I'm out of water. All right, we're going to have to end this quick. not the hiccups. So, yeah, the game takes place in kind of like a early... seems like early colonial, like South American setting, which is cool. I feel like I mean colonialism isn't cool, but the setting, which I feel is one that I have not seen very much, much less in this kind of style of game, is a cool one to tap. Playing through the game, I feel like there's a lot of different weapon types, I'll say that drop. Like you just have one character, you're not like picking like a different class, but different weapons drop so you can kind of find weapons that you are most comfortable with as you go around. And then of course you have to go through the brutal decision of like, oh no, this weapon I don't like to use is a better weapon than what I'm holding in terms of the numbers, but do I want to use it? Is it worth it? I don't know. Maybe I want to use this one, and it's decision bonus fire paralysis. Damage. Decision paralysis. It's making you make decisions. I do feel wandering around like maybe areas needed like a little more variety to their enemy mobs. Like I was just kind of bashing the same things over and over again. But you know, it's very in terms of its gameplay and what it is wanting to do. It is very solid for one of these games. It was not jumping out at me in any way other than kind of the other than the setting, which is cool, but other than that, it's pretty standard in terms of what it's doing and kind of the gameplay and the spells you're getting. Like nothing was really crazy. The big fucking problem is this game does not run very well on the Switch at all. It is like constantly like hitching and having like frame rate issues. Like there is a dodge roll that you use by just like flicking the right stick, which is also how it worked in the console port of Diablo 3. And it's just like whenever you roll, it's just like so like agonizing, and like, you know, it's slow to begin with, and then like when the screen moves, it kind of like hitches in the animation. And it is definitely worse when you're playing in handheld mode, but it is still not great if you have it hooked up to your screen. And that kind of like that alone just kind of just paves over any goodness that the game is trying to do. It's just like, it's just not technically on a fun level to play yet on the Switch. I'm sure the PC version is probably fine, but I didn't review that one. But as of right now, it's like, yeah, I haven't checked it for a patch in the past couple days. I did because it came out last week. I checked it over the weekend to see if anything had come out, but not as of yet, because I did have it before release by like a week or so. Sometimes there's a day one patch, but I haven't seen that yet. So it's still running kind of garbo on the Switch. I'm sure it's fine on PC, but again, yeah, that's not what I play. But on the Switch, like, I could not recommend it in its current state. If it does get an optimization patch, then I would label it a try it. Like, it's still not an exceptional one of those games, and you know, Diablo and Torchlight and some kind of better versions of that model are available on the Switch as it is, and obviously on PC. But yeah. That's kind of where the game is at right now. It's just like,
so if they get it in shape, technically it's worth checking out.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Cool. Sounds good. Well, that is it for you, Tim. Thank you for hanging out.
I'm going to hang out for a little bit. I want to hear about Sunless Sky. So I'm going to hang out for a couple more. So keep going.
Okay. Well, next up is Going Medieval. You're going to have to wait a little bit longer.
Yeah, that's fine. I'll hear about this one too.
Developed by Foxy Voxel, published by the Irregular Corporation, released June 1st on Steam Early Access for $24.99. Stake your claim in this colony building sim and survive a turbulent medieval age. Construct a multi-story fortress in a land reclaimed by wilderness. Defend against raids and keep your villagers happy as their lives are shaped by the world around them. Chris and Cole, you both played this. Chris, we'll start with you. Tell us about Going Medieval.
Okay. I just found the unmute button, like, as I was starting to talk.
Proud of you.
Yeah. Okay, so Going Medieval is a... So, it's a lot. It's a lot of things. So, at its core, it's kind of a RTS simulation where you gather resources, you build buildings, you know, make a nice happy life for your villagers, and you know, keep them happy and thriving, and you know, reclaim all the land and gather up more people, and you know, kind of course, depending on how you choose your options, defend that home from invaders, including overzealous church people, which is funny that, like, in the lore of the game, 95% of the human population has been wiped out, and there's still, like, religious zealots out there trying to kill everybody else. And it does check out. But here's the thing, you know, it looks so, like, especially if you look at, like, screenshots and stuff, it's like, it seems like it's so basic, but as soon as you start, like, this game, just the deep end is just abysmal, not in a bad way. I mean, abyssal? It is an abyss of details and things that you can...
Those are very different words.
Abyssal. Well, not very different,
but they mean different things.
Yeah, no. Okay, I got it.
Abyssal.
Abyssal. The deep end of this game is abyssal.
Yes.
You basically start with your three people. You can roll them randomly, or you can actually sit there and, like, kind of customize them, rename them. They won't have faces because the graphics of this game are, it's weird because, like, it's kind of voxel, but kind of not. I don't know.
No, it's more low poly.
It's low poly, yeah.
Fuck faces, who needs them? We've been coming up half of them for a year anyways.
Exactly.
These guys had been smart, they'd have been covering theirs too, but, you know.
You can still have beards.
Yeah, so you can have beards.
That's the one thing you should cover your face
with. Small little things that give you some detail. Like, there's differences in their clothes, and they have different hair color and things like that, but they lack, like, eyes, nose, mouth type of defining features.
Right. And so they've got all that, and each character, you'll notice, has just a bunch of stats, like, tons of stats. Everything from, like, you know, not just general construction, but like specifically carpentry or like, you know, not just gathering resources, but specifically like mining or cutting down trees. Cutting down trees is a stat in this mm-hmm. game. Tons of that. All of those are rolled randomly as well. And, you know, also the game gives every character a backstory. Like, which I haven't actually seen a generated backstory since, like, Daggerfall, which, you know, and it's kind of interesting. So, like, you don't just have units, you have people that, like, you're responsible for, and, like, you kind of
get attached to them.
You do get attached to them, yeah. And, I'll get to some bits with that in a minute, but, so you get them in there in this blank spot. There's a pile of resources on the ground, thank God, which is possibly you. You might not be God, but you're the invisible hand of progress, I guess. And, you build, like, stuff, you need to build them a shelter. You need to, like, and also, interestingly, and it took me a second to figure this out, all the items that you wake up next to on the ground are all quote-unquote forbidden, because I guess that's a way you can lock away, because your characters do some stuff automatically, and it's all locked away, so you have to, like, unforbid it if you want them to use it, and then forbid it again if you don't want them to use it. But, yeah, I started hunting for resources on my own because I was like, "Well, this stuff's forbidden. I don't know what to do here." And then I clicked on this this little update that came up that said "forbidden / unforbidden" or whatever, or allow, mm-hmm. and it told me, "Oh, you can make this stuff allowed." I was like, "Oh," and then I made my stuff allowed. Anyways, yeah, you build stuff and like you design all your buildings, and they're multi-tier. You can go underground. You can build a multi-floor buildings, and you use like the mouse to either, you know, click or drag on squares and stuff to make them like exactly to your design. You don't just build like, you know, let's build a farm. You're like, here's a building, we're going to designate this as like food storage or something, and like then, you know, and you designate spaces in the game in these buildings that you build for specific things. Like, you can make a whole floor of your, of, like, one of your units, and you can make, like, just this one room, just storage for hats. You can, I'm not even joking, you literally can choose apparel and then hats, and, like, these squares are only for hats.
Wow.
It really let you narrow it down so that you can create the kind of situation and scenarios that you want. One of my favorite things that I noticed was like Chris was talking about how you could forbid or allow. You can forbid all hunting and only allow cannibalism.
I didn't think to do that, but yes, that is the freedom that
Cole, you are sick.
And also, okay, so here's something about hunting though that I love. So you want to hunt for food, right? Because maybe your cabbages haven't grown in yet, and or, you know, you've just run out of like straight up wheat to throw into your mouth.
Ran out of other humans to eat.
You've run out of other humans to eat, yeah. But it will tell you if there's like a raid that's gonna happen to you. They're like, there's people coming, they're gonna get here in a day and 15 hours. And, you know, so, you know, then your cannibals can start, you know, getting the stove ready.
extra butcher station.
Exactly. Yeah. You make specific butcher stations, and the butcher animation is hilarious, by the way. It's just somebody goes up there and just goes ham with a cleaver, just like on nothing. They're just like, and then you have a pile of steaks. Anyway, so to go hunting, you need to get a character. You need to equip that character with a bow. Then that character, you send them to go hunting in like a field that you designate, like a, you know, and you can highlight the animals that you want that character to go after. And then you just watch that character go after these specific animals. Like, it's not just, they're just shooting a bow into like the wilderness and then suddenly you have a pile of meat. No, you get to watch this guy, like, just try
it.
Tell
you, oh, it missed, or oh, yeah. You broke a bone or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is funny because, like, if you let rabbits go for a while, they keep coming back in, like, larger numbers. So it even has that. And then, yeah, once your character, you know, kills something successfully, then you drag the carcass back to, you can eat the meat raw if you want, but that's not a good idea.
I would not do that.
Yeah, you actually have to build the stuff to process the meat and build some storage to keep the meat, and then you build stuff to cook the meat. Like, you have to do all these steps, and then you have your food.
And you have
the meat storage next to the hat storage, of course, right?
Yes. Steaks and hats. Yeah.
You got somewhere to put the hats from the heads that the cannibals took to make some lunch out of.
We're mixing jokes now. This is getting dangerous.
But
I'm just over here figuring out how to weave a fine young cannibals reference into this.
Oh, you drive me crazy.
There you go.
One of my favorite stories, and I want to point out before I tell this, this game straight up tells you when you launch it that it's in heavy development. Like, there's I'm impressed with how much is here, and I want to know what the fuck else they're going to do to it, right? Because I had a moment where I sent a dude hunting after deer, and up until this one point, I had only been, like, clicking on the does that wandered too close to the camp, but I got unruly when I saw this big buck, and I was like, must kill, right? There's no humans, so we need some food, and I might as well go kill this deer. And so I sent him after it without thinking about it. I hadn't really checked his stats that well, and he wasn't a very good hunter. And I'd sent him after this buck, and he got, like, way down in the corner, and I noticed he was losing health. So I zoomed in on what he was doing, and he was trapped in the corner with this deer punching it.
And he broke his bow or something.
Fighting back. Yeah, he broke his bow. And the deer was fighting back and hitting him because he was just sitting there in the corner trying to punch the deer. And so I finally had to stop him, and I had him, like, run home. And the deer chased him all the way across the map to the front door until it was locked. And was still standing there waiting for him.
Man. Which, by the way, that's another thing that I wanted to point out in combat. So, you know, you get attached to these characters. They've got stories. They've got, you know, they even develop their own stories over time. And oftentimes, if somebody new comes to your place, they also have a story. It's like, oh, this person's fleeing the law or that crazy church or something like that. And, but, like, if you get into combat and your characters lose all their health, they don't, well, I mean, I'm sure that they eventually do if you ignore them, but they don't, like, immediately die when they, like, you know, fall over and they're like, oh, my blood. So the process of, like, getting them healed is to, like, actually assign a person, like, one or two people to carry them back to their bed and then, like, actually take care of their wounds. And when you click on them, there's, like, a list of all the wounds they have. Mm-hmm. It's, like, open head wound, you know, bleeding in the neck and, like, things like that. And it's just, like, I don't know. It's, like, the level of detail in this game is incredible. For the fact that nobody even has any faces.
there's even an ability to have people, if somebody's being treated for wounds or whatever, you can assign people to convalesce and basically just sit with them and take care of their other needs as well.
Yeah, because you have, like, this kind of happy, like, there's a status on every character that shows, like, how they're feeling and how they're happy and or how happy they are and stuff like that. And, yeah, usually the ones bleeding from the head aren't so happy. So
you would think. Yeah. Well, they are saying that they are planning to have the game in early access for about a year. The price may go up as features are added. It is sitting at $25 right now. What do the two of you think?
I love it. I would definitely, like... Here's the thing, is, like, when you start a new game, you have the option to turn combat completely off. Like,
that's what I did.
Yeah, you just do peaceful mode. No one will ever come to you and bother you. You can just build a town and collect resources and just make this like, you know, this post-pandemic heaven.
That's what I've been doing with cannibals.
Yeah, with cannibals and hats. But, like... Just the fact that they can have that mode and the game is still something that will keep you, like, coming back to it. Mm-hmm. I think that's really impressive. So as they add more stuff, I'm excited. I want to see what happens. because the list is long. I mean, I could pull it up, but I turned it off because it was making my graphics card fan go crazy.
Cole, your thoughts?
I love it. I give it a buy it. I had a great time with it. I appreciate that there's a peaceful mode and I can just sit there and fuck around and make my little village of cannibals do as I please. And sometimes they hunt deer and get attacked by them and chase across the map. And it's delightful.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Moving on is Sunless Sky Sovereign Edition, developed and published by Fail Better Games, released May 19th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $24.99. Captain a spacefaring steam locomotive as a new Victorian Empire takes to the stars, lead your hapless crew into trouble and out of their minds, barter for barrels of time, smuggle souls, pause for a cricket and a cup of tea. Cornell, tell us about Sunless Sky Sovereign Edition.
Yeah, it's fucking weird.
Did you play Sunless Sea?
No, I had never heard of any of this until Joe was like, hey, do you want to review this? And I'm like, this looks fucking weird. Sure. I was not disappointed in the level of oddity that exists in this game. So the idea behind this, and you might be good for helping me with this, Tim, because if you played the other game, then you'll have... Oh, well, there it is. In that case, you might be very helpful for me here. So the idea behind this game is that you are... Well, initially, you are like the first officer of a vessel piloted by a captain who is falling under a very unfortunate fate. Essentially, they are dying from some crazy shit. And after you port them to the first local space station, they die off and you become the owner and captain of the vessel that you were on. I should also mention immediately that this game takes place in an alternate version of London that actually exists in the sky, and you're piloting a flying train.
In Sunless Sea, you took place in a fictional version of London that was under the sea. It was like sea under the sea. Actually, I think regular London existed, but you would return to fallen London. But yeah, there was like a way... It was weird. Again, it was weird, but yeah, it was like a world. It was a sea covered in darkness that was like below the sea of the real world.
And that's the funny thing. Like, honestly, if it weren't called Sunless Sky or Sunless Sky, I could believe this was underwater too, because like some of the walls, like they have like barnacle and stuff on them from stuff. So it's like it's a very bizarre layout of a world they give you here. But the thing that is awesome in its own right is that they do nothing, and I mean nothing, to explain it to you. You're meant to just come into this and be like, yeah, makes total sense. Everything's normal. I had a conversation with a person at a port where after I recruited her, someone walked by and called her attractive and then scooped his eyeballs out, and they described it all in narrative text completely normally, like nothing was wrong. But
yeah, this tracks.
But the thing that's awesome about this text, this could be bad for some players, though I'll admit, is that there is a lot of text, but it's all very well written text too. Like, I feel like I'm actually reading like mini novels when I end up at, when I dock at ports. Like, there's a lot going on.
The first feature on the store page is 800,000 words of intertwining stories.
So I believe all of it. Every drop of it. I mean, because there's a lot going on. Like, you'll go to a dock at a town. Like, you think of like an RPG, and it's like you go to a town and you're walking around and you're just like, go to the store, talk to a few guys, talk about how much they love Wheaties, whatever, and you're done. In this game, when you're at the port, you want to go through all the options and do your shopping and stuff, but everything comes with text and you're going to read it. Because if you don't, you'll make dumb decisions. So essentially, you're going to be spending a good chunk of time in every port. And I feel like since that's a large part of the game, you should come into this knowing you're going to be reading. But what ends up happening is once you've taken over control of this ship, you are set up to literally just explore the stars. The idea behind the game, and it's interesting how they designed it, is that when you roll a character, because you roll characters in this game, honestly, you can choose like a role, like a past life for them, and an ambition. I let the game auto choose all of them for me through randomization, because there's like a bunch of different options. Like, I don't have the fortitude for this. For now, I understand the game won't have to make a decision, but like, you can be like a poet, you can be like a former criminal, all kinds of stuff. And your ambitions, like all these things determine like your starting stats. However, your ambition also determines your actual end game condition. So like if you're a poet, your end game goal will likely be to travel the stars and write a certain number of like poems to pass off as like your experience in exploring the galaxy or whatever. Admittedly, though, don't worry because you'll never accomplish that. But it's really cool to have goals, but yeah, you won't be doing that because this game is really fucking hard. And I say that in probably one of the most endearing ways possible because I think that's kind of the part of the charm of the game, too, because you're out here exploring this galaxy. And the way it works is there are four different regions to explore in total that you'll ultimately maybe get to. As you're exploring, your ship is being propelled by fuel, and you have a crew on board. And as time progresses, or more specifically, as you move through the stars, you'll lose supplies, and you'll lose fuel. You have a storage capacity limit, which you can change if you upgrade your ship, which, again, you'll need money, so good fucking luck with that. But you basically, every block of fuel or supplies you carry takes up a slot on your ship. But you'll also want to carry actual cargo for the purpose of missions and things of that nature, which, by the way, in this universe, time is an actual consumable good, which is really awesome and yet also very strange because, again, they expect you to come in being like, yeah, that totally makes sense.
If only, right? Oh, my God.
I don't think they do, though. Like, going into Sunless Sea, there was also, like, there was a lot of figuring out as you go. So I imagine they kind of took the same tact in this game and that, like, there's a lot you have to figure out as you go.
Well, that's what I mean. Like, there is stuff like that. But what I'm saying is, like, for example, I came across a person, right, who was like a time smith, essentially. The quest, she asked me to port her from one port to another because she needed to adjust the time at another port. I was like, sure, no problem. But at the time of recruiting her, I'm like, what do you mean adjust the time at another port? I don't get it, but whatever. And on the trip over, there was a point during the drive where the dialogue stops because she notices that your ship's clock is off, so she wants to adjust it for you. And you go, sure, which leads down this nice dialogue tree where she's talking to you about like the various warring factions, because there are warring factions in this game. And over through that dialogue, you can potentially pick up the idea of like her role in keeping track of time, because since time is such an odd scenario in this world, it requires an actual task force of people specifically to keep time measured and accurate across all the different locales. But in that situation, that was explained. But then I got to that port where I dropped her off, and I was able to purchase barrels of time. And I was like, okay, this is odd. And then I went to another port where they outright said, we'll take barrels of time. And there was another dialogue I had with something else where they mentioned that rich people sometimes will stockpile time, and then when they go into retirement, they will just like shotgun time to extend their retirement. So I was like, that's the kind of like exposition I was getting. Like, it wasn't like there was never a time where someone was like, in a world above the clouds, people drag time like coke. Like, it was just, you got it as you went, but it's still like they kind of hit you with like, hey, here it is. Like, that's the deal. Cause you know what I mean? Like, you sometimes you'll play like a narrative, like an RPG, and they'll go through the whole rigmarole, like a narrator might even just straight up say, like, in this world, things are different. And they kind of lay it out for you. In this game,
it's just assume that you know that that's exactly how things are.
Exactly. Unless it comes up in exposition, there's no one that's going to already explain, this is how time works here. It's just, oh, okay, well, that seems cool. And I like these things. Like, I like sometimes, I know there's some people who like to have all their stuff crammed down their throat for them, but I'm the kind of guy that likes when games kind of let you become a part of the environment itself. Like, it builds a world and expects you just to join in for the fun or the insanity in the case of this game. Because there's also Cthulhu type shit going on in that, as you are sailing the seas, you are looking for locales typically. So, give you an example to go back earlier. So I mentioned that person wanted me to transport her to another location, right? That locale, she said, it is east of here. But east is a lot. And yep. There is no, like, compass. And there's no guide at all. The only option you really get that can help you find your way around. It's like early in the game, you get a scout, like a bat. And you can send the bat out at the cost of some of your supplies, and he'll come back and be like, hey, I think I came across something out in the sea. And it'll just be an icon. The icons have different meanings, like unknown horror, unknown, you know, event, unknown, like, it's like a bunch of different interesting stuff, but nothing that specifically says you're going to a town, bro, or this is the exact town you want. You don't even know. So you take on, you take up what he says, you go looking, and you come across a variety of different events. Sometimes you'll come across marauders that want to kill you and take all your stuff. You might come across like wreckages that you can loot for goods and houses that you can check out for exploration purposes. And all these things, of course, also carry similar sort of RPG elements to them, because when you engage in these locales, you might get like a narrative arc that plays out, where it's like, say, for example, you come across a wrecked ship in space. They'll go, I'm paraphrasing, obviously. I'm not going to read like, you know, 2,000 lines in my head, but you come across a ship. What do you want to do? And the game might say, you can load, you can board the ship. You have a 30% chance of success based on this stat that you have. And then it shows a die roll, which indicates, I guess, that there's a die roll that happens behind the scenes, and they're basically saying you have to roll a 3 or higher or something like that. But it basically gives you the odds of your chances, and it will also tell you what is required of your character to pull it off. So if you don't even have the tools, like say a specific document or a specific item or something, you don't even get the opportunity to do it at all, let alone worry about if you're successful or not. So these things happen a lot. They're really cool in their own sense, because again, the writing is very good. So you kind of feel good about as you play out. Though sometimes some of the outcomes can be set, like you're like, oh, cool, I got all this stuff. But then one of your crewmates just didn't make it back. He fucking died. Like, whoops, sucks to be him. I didn't even know that was going to happen. But in addition, while you're out in the sea sailing, a few other things can sort of happen. One, you can come across events of horror. I was lucky in the sense that none of my many deaths involved dying of terror, but I assume you can do that, because as you sail out and every once in a while you may come across a terror event, your horror rating will just start going up just by being in the vicinity of that event. Other times you might have horror events simply because you come across a situation that literally terrifies your crew and the narrative elements. And over time, what I did notice from my horror spiking was that people on my ship started saying crazy shit and doing crazy things, occasionally resulting in an event that made me respond to horror events that are taking place on my ship. People be crazy, yo, as they say. But I like the element of dealing with that, and the fact that there are ways to mitigate it, but there aren't very many, because again, this is a universe that wants you dead, so that's cool, I guess. And there's also combat that you can engage in on the seas. And you might be dealing with other marauders, but every once in a while you'll also come across like freaky-ass creatures, like weird fish monsters that just barrel roll straight at you and then crash into the wall and blow up and leave items. Like, very odd things like that. And when you fight them, your ship does have a gun, and you can fire it, but depending on the type of gun you've got, it has a power level, and it has a heat level, which means every time you fire the gun, it heats up your ship, and if you overheat the gun, your gun will stall, and you'll get your ass beat, because enemies will fuck you up. Don't screw around. I came across a dreadnought, thought I was a badass, fired a shot, it blew me out of the damn sky, it was embarrassing.
God.
You can kind of abuse certain features, though. Like if you die and you don't want to die, you can reload a previous save, or being like me, you panics, just reset your game and go to the last autosave. But if you do let yourself die, you will respawn as a new captain, and you get to carry over like some experience elements. So the map that you last had when you died off, like where your last, like you last docked at, for example. Because it's almost like saying the guy died and their artifacts were left to the new captain, essentially. So you'll get like the old stuff they had in storage. You'll get like the last map they had at the last dock. And you'll also unlock new facets, which can unlock various like, you know, stat updates and traits that can make it a little easier for you to progress a little bit further into the Sunless Sky.
Yeah, in Sunless Sea, you had to get enough money to like, I think you had to like afford a like dwelling to like have a kid, and then you had to like actually like have a will written for you. Like there was some amount of cost to actually being able to pass down like your map and your stuff. So Is there any like wall barrier to that in that game, or is that just like an option?
There might be better things you can get if you break barriers, but what I've come to notice is that, because I did come across the option to buy a dwelling, but you, early on, for example, you come across the option to get like a bank vault, and the bank vault allows you to store stuff at different ports and stuff, which is how I believe how you end up getting the stuff left to you when you die. I didn't have to pay any money to get it, which I'm thankful for, and I'm guessing that might have come from people saying, I can't afford to do all this shit before I die.
No, it was hard to do. Like,
because this is not an easy game. Like, I just picture the person who gets gung-ho, because I know that's how it is, and I'm not that guy, which is why I suck. But you'll be like, well, I can only carry 12 things, and I need to have 5 slots to be reserved for items I need to transport, which means I don't have a lot of cargo for fuel and supplies. This better fucking count. This trip better count for me. But because that's something I think will be interesting about. It's interesting about this game is just the idea of like having to juggle how much you want to store on your ship for cargo versus how much you want to store for, you know, otherwise. And money doesn't just grow on trees. You can't grind for cash. You might find some stuff out and about that might yield you some sovereign, which is the currency in the game. Or you might get a quest where if you're lucky enough to fulfill it, you'll get a decent, tidy sum. But then you might want to spend it on supplies or hiring new crew members at a dock or repairing your ship. Like, money is tight in this game. And you can't just be like, I'm just going to fumble about until something fucking makes sense. No, you're going to die. That's how you fumble about. You'll die, respawn, and try again. And what this game does when you do die, and I'll stop rambling because this is like a long-ass review.
It has been a long-ass review.
There's a lot of game here. But when you, like, the way they do the map of this game, too, is when you die and come back, generally, like, they spawn the map in a way where, like, the locations and the quests and all, they are as they are, but they rearrange certain stuff. So, like, if you have the map revealed to you, the stuff will be where it was, but it seems like they move certain locations around. So, like, you may not, it may not be in the same place it was before, because I definitely experienced that once, where it's like, oh, they told me the town was over there. But now they're saying the same town is over there. And it was because, of course, I died after leaving that port, which means I didn't carry over that map with detail. So I was like, well, everything's got rearranged around and you don't know where that stuff is anymore. So now it's new. So it was kind of cool how that happened. And then, thankfully, the next time I was able to actually fucking find where I was going. And it was hard to find it. But I honestly like this game. The only thing about it is don't play it when you're tired because, again, you'll be reading a lot. But, and also, when you're out there sailing and doing stuff, it's not particularly fast-paced. It is like an actual adventure. You're progressing. You get this trepidation as you wonder if you're going to find something before you run out of shit. But that is the game in and of itself. It's exploring, seeing the unknown, checking on events, expecting to not always make it. But it makes the triumphs that much freaking sweeter. And I think games like this are not as common as they should be. I like this game.
Cool. So $25, what is your official verdict?
I think it's a solid purchase. How does this sound to you, Tim?
Yeah, no, it sounds in like looking at screenshots, it sounds like they've built on Sunless Sea quite a bit with this one, in terms of, you know, the presentation and some of the mechanics. So and I really like that first one. I didn't get to an ending in it. But I did put a good number of hours in it, so this sounds, like, really cool.
I honestly wouldn't mind seeing some percentages of how many people got to the end of either of these games, because I don't think many do. I can't imagine a lot of people were beating these games.
Yeah, but you spend a lot of time of adventuring and never seeing out the fruits of your labor.
And that somehow ends up still being fucking awesome.
Yeah, you can still have some cool adventures. Yeah, it sounds neat.
Awesome. All right, well, moving on. Are you going to stick around, Tim, or are you heading out?
No, now I'm going to bed. Now I'm TP.
Cool. Do you have any final words?
I do not. Good night.
Yeah, night.
Catch you later.
Next game to talk about is called Carnivores Dinosaur Hunt, developed and published by Digital Dreams Entertainment, released June 1st on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $14.99. Carnivores Dinosaur Hunt is a first-person hunting simulator where you hunt the largest and most dangerous beasts to ever exist. Dinosaurs. Cole, you love hunting games. How was the dinosaur hunting?
I love hunting games and I love dinosaurs. So I was kind of like in my element here.
If you love dinosaurs, why do you want to kill them?
Because that's how hunting works. I love deer, but I also like to eat them.
Triceratops meat. Mm.
Yeah, tasty. It takes a while before you can hit the Triceratops, and those are some mean motherfuckers. I have some mixed feelings about carnivores, because as an arcadey type of hunting game, it works. It's very bare bones, but it tries at times to be a little more, like, it wants to be more of a proper hunting simulator, but with dinosaurs. But the actual basis of it is, like, you're kind of just randomly shooting dinosaurs, right? So you have to buy your license to hunt different types of dinosaurs. You're in some kind of, like, I don't want to say a simulated world, although I guess realistically you're in a simulated world, but you're in these kind of situations where you get dropped in to an island with dinosaurs via a drone. Okay.
Okay.
And you get to pick which island you're starting off with. Although when you initially start, you only have one to choose from. You eventually unlock a couple others. It seems like there's a lot of islands initially, but then you realize it's like the same three islands, just in different weather situations. So daylight, dark, fog, rain. But they try to make it look like it's a variety of islands. When you start off, you can only hunt Stegosaurus. Eventually, you can get enough points. You kill enough Stegosaurus that you get enough of the little points that you can buy a license to hunt Ankylosaurus. And if you keep going, you'll eventually get to drop a T-Rex. Just because the dinosaurs early on are vegetarian, that doesn't mean they won't fuck you up if they get too close to you or you get too close to them. There were certainly a couple of times where I was like, oh, they're all around me and it's fine. And then immediately I bought the license for the Ankylosaurus and I got smack in the middle of a bunch of them. And one just decides to come up and knock my fucking head off with its tail. And I got a hunt fail alert. And nice. I was like, fuck, I didn't even know that could happen, because up until then. And then I got mad because there's an achievement for having 16 successful hunts in a row. And I had to at least be on 9 or 10. Because and then I fucked up and got too close to an Ankylosaurus and it took my head off.
Proud of you.
Yeah, well done, me, right?
Yeah.
When you're hunting, you have what's called a mist, an MIST. It's basically just like a little handheld device which has a radar on it, and it beeps whenever dinosaurs are near you, and you can see them on the radar if you've unlocked them or whatever. Then the mist actually has a second mode where you can use it as binoculars. So if you use them in the binocular state, it pulls them up with the trigger, the left trigger, and you can look around. And if you spot a dinosaur, it will actually show you the weak points on it. Typically the lungs and the heart. The lungs will show blue, the heart will show red. If there's any armor plating on it, like in the case of an Ankylosaurus, the plating will show white so that you know to avoid that, right?
Okay.
The initial gun it starts you off with is just this little rifle without any kind of scope or anything, which is fine. But it's the most inaccurate piece of trash I've ever used in my life. I don't understand. I went into the shooting range with it, with all the upgrades, just out of curiosity, because there's an achievement for dropping five of the targets in the shooting range with five bullets. And I was like, fuck, I'll go do that real quick, right? Yeah, I would shoot with my sights perfectly on the red dot, which would be the heart for whatever target I was shooting at. And the bullet hole in the target would be up by the brain. That's not correct.
No.
And there's an extent of like, oh, there's some gun sway or whatever, but we all know I play a lot of this shit. We all know I know what I'm talking about when it comes to a shooter. That's an inaccuracy in how your gunplay is playing out. That needs to be adjusted. I can get having the gun sway and bullet drop because of wind or whatever having some kind of effect on your weapon, but this game doesn't give you any of that kind of information and does not indicate that that needs to be taken into effect before or taken into account before you shoot, because it doesn't claim to have any effect in that regard, right? So if that's an issue, they need to tell you that. And if it's not an issue, they need to fix that. It kind of goes both ways. But I don't think if you're playing in the shooting range, it shouldn't be off. There's not wind and things to that effect that should be making that big a difference in where you aim and where it shoots. You can unlock more weapons later on. They're all insanely priced. You have to hunt a lot to get any kind of upgrade. The earlier dinosaurs, it will tell you that you can get up to 100 points for dropping one of them. If I was lucky, I would get a 3-ton stegosaurus and only get 12 points for it. The more dinosaurs that you drop in a hunt, the more they're worth. And even still, I was doing my best to get 20 and 25 points a dinosaur. So that is something that, like, the cost to upgrade and the points you receive for hunting need to be balanced out a little more. Now, I don't mind, like I said, I don't mind that it has the arcadey elements, but it is kind of a pain when it tries to pull in too much of a simulator side.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't have the backing for that.
It can't decide what it wants to do, if it wants to be arcade or sim.
It doesn't know if it wants to be Cabela's, which is arcade, or if it wants to be The Hunt Call of the Wild, which is a simulator. Like, it needs to find its happy medium. And I think, honestly, for this kind of game, it really should just embrace the arcade aspect and go whole hog on it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't need to worry. If you're not going to give me the ability to go into a shop and buy different pheromones and calls and you know, scents and cover scent and things like that, if I don't have those kind of abilities, I don't need to worry if a dino can smell me, right?
No.
But it'll make a deal about it and they'll go running off. And you can buy an upgrade where they're like, oh, 50% less likely to notice you. And it's like, okay, you need to decide if that's like an element that you're going to actually put time and effort into, or if you're just going to go, no, it's an arcade, whatever, shoot it if you see it. I would far rather it be more accurate gunplay lined up with that arcade aspect. I like the ability to be able to have like that x-ray vision where you can see, oh, there's the armor, there's the lungs, there's the heart, and just aim straight for that heart shot and have it actually be accurate and hit.
As this one stands, $15, what are you thinking about it?
I'm going to go with a try it. I'm not saying in any way that I didn't have fun with it, but I think for a lot of other people, that indecisiveness and that inaccurate gunplay can really throw them off. I had fun, but I'd like to see it polished more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Next up is Until We Die, developed and published by Pixeye Games, released June 3rd on Steam for $16.99. Until We Die is a side-scrolling strategy game about defending your base, where you have to run around as Ivan, assign tasks to people, and fight mutants in the post-apocalyptic subway. Pernell, tell us about your time with Until We Die.
I think it's funny that of the three games I reviewed tonight, two of them were like, so you're going to die a lot games. it's just kind of the world I live in, so I'm cool with it. This is a you're going to die a lot game, if you didn't hear me. Until We Die is a game where I guess the world is existent in a place where mutants have taken over the Earth, and humans, or the last remnants of humans in this particular society, are holed up in the metro tunnels, and they're trying to fight their way out or die trying, as in until they die. And this idea is that you will basically start out in like the center of a train tunnel. You'll get dropped off by way of like a rail car. And the idea is that you're trying to expand your territory going left or right in hopes of progressing farther and hopefully just succeeding in a way. Like, for example, the main goal of the first mission, which, spoiler alert, I never succeeded at, was complete in the last 28 days, like survive for 28 days, which means there wasn't even really an extending goal, like to get further out. It was just don't die. But naturally, you're going to want to expand out because opportunities arise as you expand further out. What do I mean by that? Well, for example, when you first dock, you are able to, you start out with like a few helpers. They're like the base type of unit, like officers, I'll call them. And what they can do is help build things if you have the right resources, and they can scavenge. So scavenging means like if you find like food on the ground or boxes, you can scavenge them for either food items or like gear resources. Gears are what are used to build special buildings like, well, training facilities, because once you use certain, once you get a certain amount of gears and you find the specific spot that will allow you to build the first training environment, it's like for diggers. You can spend the gears, they will build this environment, and then you can send the person in to run the facility. And then after that, you can send other people in to train in that art and come back with a new class. So whereas an officer can scavenge and help build, diggers can't help build, but they do more. They actually have a melee attack, and they are better at scavenging resources, like because they have shovels, they can dig up the mushrooms, which are the food items in the game. What do you do with the food items? Well, the guy that drops you off in the tram, he waits around and plays guitar because he's cool like that. But if you give him food, he will take it as a payment, leave, and come back with new workers or and some supplies, like a drop of supplies over a period of time. You will have to do that because that's pretty much the main way to get new workers is by having him go out and bring them back for you, as well as supplies. Now, there's a clock that runs throughout the entire time you're playing this game. Because like I said, for example, the first mission was survive 28 days. During the first half of the clock for a day, your primary goal will be to extend yourself left to right, build up walls where you can using, again, resource gears you find in crates and the like. Basically build up like rest stations for healing your troops and build new facilities where you can. During the evening or early evening, a fog will start to creep in. And the fog starts to creep in, you might see enemies approach, but not always. But it's enough of a sign to say, get your ass back to base, because getting back to base requires you to walk. Running takes stamina, and stamina burns out fast. So you don't want to be caught too far away when the time to get back arises, because you will be caught tired and unable to get back. Once actual nightfall comes, however, you might get a guy saying, oh, God, defenses breached on the left wall. Which means at this time, enemies are approaching, and they're trying to get to your power reactor, which is at the center of your town. And if they get to the center of your town and destroy your reactor, it's game over. Because that's actually the main game over condition, aside from your hero getting murdered. So what ends up happening is enemies start approaching, and the option that you have are building walls to slow their approach and attacking them to kill them. How do you attack them? Well, if you have diggers, you can assign them to walls, and they can stab at them from behind the wall with a shovel. If Ivan is there, who is the hero, he can fire a gun. He has unlimited ammo, but he does have to reload. And it's a really cool option to have, except he can't be everywhere at once. So be careful. You can't rely on him too much because you won't make it if he has to do all the work. But if he is there, you're in good hands because that gun is powerful. But you basically are doing that and keeping them back. There are other units you can get, like engineers, which can be used to construct, to more technological facilities and also to repair busted walls. You can get, and also they can throw Molotov cocktails, but I never really managed to pull it off. I just got the icon and failed at it. But the point is, I know they can do it. There's also like other units you can get where eventually you can build up facilities that lets you like construct wooden shields to block attack damage from units, as long as you have a shield handy. The Molotov cocktails, I believe, have to be constructed too, which is likely why I never was able to throw them, because in the times I was trying, I didn't have any yet. And there's also other classes, which I won't talk about, that you can earn that can kind of stem the tide on certain elements of combat, like ranged combat and stuff. And that's actually one of the things that's worth talking about in the game as far as something worth mentioning that might be a challenge for people, which is that it has a rudimentary tutorial. That tutorial being like, you know, this is how you scavenge. This is how you build a facility. This is how you build a wall. However, one big thing that hit me that I didn't realize for the most part until I finally figured out on my own, because the tutorial doesn't tell you, is around like day 7 or so, I started getting approached by something that was just like destroying my walls. Like, I'm like, okay, I put like 5 guys over there. They should be able to handle it. And it's like, nope, your defenses are getting wrecked. And I'm like, what's going on? And it turns out there was like little bulbous dude who was barfing balls over the wall. So he was like doing ranged attacks. And since the guys only had shovels, they couldn't reach him, right? So I'm like, okay. So does that mean that Ivan or whoever his name is has to always be there to fight these dudes if I don't have the means and I have to tell them to fire Molotov cocktails? No, it turns out there's actually a class that you can unlock that does have ranged attacks. But you have to get to the point where that facility is available to be built, and there's nothing that tells you that that's something that can happen, which means you just have to pull it off before that day comes when those monsters start to show up, or you're likely going to lose simply because you won't be able to stop these jerks from showing up or from tearing through your walls anyway. And I didn't even mention the fact that every certain number of days, a super wave will come through, essentially. Basically, the guy will say, we got a really bad wave coming through. And that shit's scary because, and I like it because I kind of preemptively guess how they were going to portray it, and I was not disappointed. Like, when that happens, like, for the early part of the evening, nothing happens. Like, normally you might get a few stragglers that might show up and attack you. Nothing happens. And then eventually, the fog gets really thick because the fog is the indication that monsters are coming. And then you see all the rats in the tunnel running away from where they're coming from. Like, it just shows a wave of rats in the train tracks just bolting. And you're like, oh, shit, this is about to get big. And then sure enough, they just start rampaging, tearing through your crap. You're like shooting your gun. Like, it's not enough. And at the end of it all, you might survive, but you're going to lose some bodies. And it's depressing. Like, you know, you're fucked. But eventually you're going to die, because until you die is an event, it's an inevitability. And then what happens is,
well, the name makes sense, respawn. I guess.
That's right. Fight until you can't anymore. Fight until you die.
Yeah.
And there's no carryover. You respawn, you start again. But you do carry over your knowledge of the game in hopes of doing better and progressing farther.
And you won't.
And that knowledge, oh, no, I won't go that far. Like, you ultimately will, because, I mean, it took me a couple games before I even realized there was a guy that could fire guns. But, again, it took me a lot of trial and error to be like, wait a minute. Okay, if I need to survive, if these guys are going to show up and I can't stop them, I got to push harder to get farther before that day and hope I can come across something that helps. Mm-hmm. And that's what ended up happening. I pushed farther ahead, and eventually, like, holy crap, I can build here and get these guys, but I wouldn't have gotten here if I didn't know to just fight my ass off to not, you know, hunker down and be safe, because you can't play it that safe, or I wouldn't have gotten farther enough to get to this. But
you gotta explore, you gotta expand.
You gotta explore, you gotta expand, exactly that. And if you don't, you are fuck tagged.
And I didn't
even get into the whole thing with like technology construction, which allows you to build better walls, and like the perks you can get sometimes, like where you get to choose a specific perk that might help you.
Well, I'm not letting you go there because you're going long the way it is. $17 on this one. What do you think of Until We Die?
I think you should buy Until We Die and play it until you die, because that's just the way these things work.
Cool.
That's all you couldn't say. Like, totally tubular, radical. Snacktacular.
Next game to talk about is called Strangeland, developed by Wormwood Studios, published by Wadjet Eye Games, released May 25th on Steam for $14.99. You wake in a surreal carnival where a woman cries out to you before leaping to her death. Who was she and who are you? The denizens and devices of Strangeland answer with riddles, puzzles, and warnings of a dark thing lurking at the park's peak. A new adventure from the creators of Primordia. Cole, tell us about your time with Strangeland.
So, Strangeland is a point-and-click puzzle game where you take control of a dude in an untied straitjacket. You don't know shit about him. He doesn't know shit about anything. He's in this, dare I say, strange land where it's basically just a nightmarish carnival from hell. Everything about this game, it's wonderfully illustrated, but it looks monstrous and nightmarish and terrible. There's no joy in this carnival. Immediately upon starting the game, you walk into a giant hell clown's mouth that is the building after he tells you a riddle, or he tries to tell you a joke, if you will. And it's shit. They're all the jokes are shit. They're just, everything is dark and macabre and not at all funny. So you walk in into the tent and you see a blonde haired lady who just nosedives the fuck down into a well. If you follow her, you start right back all over at the beginning of the game again. And essentially, anytime anything goes poorly for you, you will start back at the beginning. For a point and click, you sure as shit die a lot. Didn't expect that. Got mauled by a dog almost immediately. Probably should have expected that, but I threw a rock at it, so I was kind of asking for one.
Yeah, thank you.
It had a piece of metal in its mouth, and I was like, hey, I'm going to try this out. And when I started the game, it was like, oh, there's no actual fail state here. There is no wrong. There's just how you choose to do it. So I was like, well,
you chose wrong.
I chose to throw a rock, and they lied to me because there's a wrong, and you can get killed, and you have to do shit over. Although sometimes dying is actually the answer to solving some of the puzzles, because that may be what happens, what you need to have reset so that you get a different item that you couldn't have had before. So it's an interesting take on, like, sometimes death is the answer. For example, the dog killed me, and then the next time I spawned, there were rocks that were in a different place that I didn't have, and I was like, huh. Maybe don't throw these at the dog. it's a really creative game, really interesting, but it's very dark and macabre, and you've got to kind of have that interest in it. I came across a character who believed he was feeding doves, but it was just a crow had told him there were doves. And the crow had told him to pluck out his own eyes, and so he did.
Oh, God.
So he was constantly, like, scribbling these writings down under this tree with a crow sitting over him telling him what to do. And he was believing the crow because he didn't have any other options. But then, like, if you click around that area, you'll find a noose hanging from the tree. And he's like, I wouldn't try that again. It didn't work out for you last time.
Wow.
So it is insanely dark, and just for all of their, hey, there's no wrong answer, it definitely feels like there's a few. I did enjoy the game because of its odd nature and like the horror elements and stuff to it. Sometimes it can be a little difficult to actually make progress, but I think it's because even though they say, oh, we don't punish you, go your own way, do what you want. If you take that typical click everything on something to try to make it work kind of point and click strategy, if you try to do that in Strangeland, you have unintended consequences.
It'll backfire.
It'll backfire almost every time. But yeah, it's one of those that, like, for as cool and unique and as interesting as it unique. Is.
Drink.
Yeah. I was trying not to, but it slipped out eventually, didn't it? Mm-hmm. It is actually a unique game, though, for as far as, like, a point and click can be. But it's one of those that's like, it's hard to say, oh, yeah, you should go check this out, because you've really got to be the right kind of person for this game. It's not something that...
I have a feeling Aki would like this one.
Yeah, probably.
She seems fucked up enough to...
Yeah. And, like, I tend to be For as bubbly and everything as I am and cheerful, I tend to be a little more on the macabre and morbid side, and I tend to like these kind of things. So it was one of those where I was playing and I was like, I get what's happening here and I like this, but if I had to convince somebody else to buy this, it'd be kind of a hard sale.
As it stands, $15, I need a verdict.
I do think it's a try it, but again, like I said, it's a hard sale if you're not already certain that this is the kind of game you want to play.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
All right. One final game in this marathon is called Kaza Voices of the Dusk, developed and published by Nibla Games, released May 26th on Steam as a free-to-play game with various kits and packages to buy. Kaza Voices of the Dusk is an intriguing turn-based strategy card game with innovative game mechanics. Sacrifice cards to raise your Kaza and bring them back later for unexpected powerful plays. Prove your abilities in battle and draft your way to victory in extremely challenging campaigns. Chris, tell us about your time with Kaza Voices of the Dusk.
Okay, Kaza Voices of the Dusk. Yes, this is a, card game that, kind of a, I guess you would call it a deck builder. I don't even know. I don't play a lot of card games. Although, funny enough, I am playing Bat and Kaitos, which is... a card, it's a standard RPG, but it also like just so happens that things happen on cards. But that actually kind of ended up applying here, in a way I'll get to in a second. So it's one of those things where basically first you have to learn the rules of the game, which I won't go too much into because I'm sure that this has gone long. But the main meat of it is that you are a character with a certain amount of hit points. You are fighting against a character with another certain set of hit points, and your cards, basically with your cards, you are going to attack that person. So you draw four cards, and the thing that's different about this game, I guess, is that you draw four cards, and the number on the upper left is going to be the level of that card. If that card is too high level, you can't play it. The thing that you're supposed to do is basically put it in this special pile that is your cause. And every time you put one in the cause, then that cause number goes up and that's your level going up. So that means, you're discarding these, or not discarding, but moving all these like level six cards over to your cause. And then, it goes level 1, 2, 3, 4, as the turns go on, eventually it's going to get high enough where you can actually use those cards, and then you can actually take them out of that, that kind of card purgatory, and they're usually very powerful. So that usually gives you, you might be down on the ropes, but then that might turn your luck around. So it's all about kind of, doing what you can now to do the most damage and defend yourself and heal yourself. There's all kinds of like stuff. There's an entire like 5-stage tutorial that you have to go through. So I'm not going to tell you everything that these cards can do. It's mostly attacking, defending, healing, bringing in all sorts of like effects and stuff, like, think Magic the Gathering. Yeah. It's a little bit like that, which I've only played once. So that might even be oversimplifying, but anyways, it's all about balancing like what you can do now with like kind of saving up these really good like characters and attacks for later. So that's kind of how that works. The way that you build your deck is through purchasing, lots and lots of purchasing because it's free to play. But it's thankfully not exactly pay to win, because the game assures you that, basically when you buy stuff, you're purchasing more cards in little packs of five, and they actually show up in the game as packs that are opened, right? Like, they really want to give you that feeling that Purnell was talking about way earlier about, opening the pack of cards, and, every five pack has a guaranteed rare and all this other stuff. So they don't just screw you over if you're actually paying money. But the game assures us that there's nothing aside from the founders packs, quote unquote, which are like, I was looking and like this, there's this whole founder collection that costs like 48 actual dollars. So those you have to buy, but everything else. The can founder be
Solimber kit, normal price is $59.99, currently on sale. for $47.99. I think all the transactions are on sale for 20% off right now. I don't know how long that sale's going on for, but something to keep in mind if you're interested in this.
Yeah.
To see if it is still on sale.
And, you know, there's three different kinds of currencies, and the reason there is, you know, they all go towards buying new cards, and then eventually, you know, you can purchase new avatar characters, you know, change up the look of things. You know, there's, like, different little things you can get. Nothing that just gives you, like, straight-up godlike advantage or anything. And, again, all the cards besides the Founder Pack can be acquired through gameplay, they assure us. So, anyways, yeah, it's all about purchasing, and the reason why there's different currencies because it's just different ways that you can get more resources to purchase things. So you get gold through playing matches, either against the computer. You can do a whole ass campaign against computers, although each of those start at the medium difficulty, so they might be a little tough. I certainly didn't win any, not with my deck. And also, by the way, if you don't want to mess with making your own custom deck, there's tons of like pre-made decks that you can play with, and you know, kind of base your own customization off of that. Then there's another kind of currency where you like you get it through purchasing, and also like you can grab it like by logging in every day, things like that. You know, these just different rewards. And then there's one that you get from basically kind of destroying your excess cards. And you can use that currency, that's that soul ember, whatever. You can use that to actually create cards, which I didn't do, but it's there too. Lots of customization involved in there. But yeah, so, you know, overall, the whole thrust of this, you know, I didn't want to get too much into the weeds on the gameplay and stuff because it's free to play. So you can just download and play it, and it's going to make you do those tutorials. But yeah, as a free-to-play experience, it seems like it is worth getting into, because it doesn't have that terrible, you know, pay-to-win stink over it. It actually does look like they've created something that's fair for people, and they really lean on trying to get people to play against each other and stuff like that. So they're all about community building. Like, it was harder for me to find, like, the AI, like, like just to do the single player just one-on-one against the AI, because it was like there was like play against random people, play against, you know, play ranked matches, all this other stuff. And then somewhere in there was like, oh, and there's also this AI single player stuff. So,
yeah. Well, overall, it is a free to play game. So is this worth downloading and spending the bandwidth on to check out?
Yeah, if you like card games and you don't, you know, it's pretty fun. It definitely has a good hook. I think that it is worth your time. You can definitely decide for yourself whether it's something that you're going to enjoy by the end of the tutorials, because they're pretty thorough. So I'm going to say, yeah, go ahead and give it a shot.
Cool beans.
Yeah.
All right. That is it for this episode. We made it through.
Yeah.
We did it.
We did it barely. Oh my God, I'm tired. Does anyone have any final words to end the show? Don't everyone speak at
until
once.
Until we die.
Yes, we will continue the show.
My speaker wouldn't come out of mute, and it makes me mad because you were going to say, we made it to another one. I'm like, until we die.
Till we die. That's a good Slipknot song.
Oh, see? Yeah. There's your episode title.
Hey, I like Slipknot. Don't you? This is not the place to bicker about Slipknot, whether or not we like them. Does it? Anyone? Any real final words? Anyone? No? Yay? Nay?
Goodbye.